Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Joining me this week, it is a reconvening of the Super Nerds. Joining me, it's Justin Cevegas.
Hey, everyone.
And writer for Anime News Network, Mike Toole.
Hail, friends and neighbors.
And, of course, the host of the Anime World Order podcast. You can also find him on TalkUSA.com. It's Daryl Surratt.
All right, rattlers, let's get rattling.
Okay, then. mostly this is going to be a Twitter question show because we got so many of them. I normally try and come up with topics, but then, you know, I say like, hey, we're doing this and put out the call for Twitter questions, and then my mentions feed floods with questions. So mostly it's going to be that, but it's been a little while since we've had you guys on, and so I'd like to do a round of what we've all been consuming. Justin, let's start with you. I know you just got back from New York.
Yeah, I have been consuming absolutely nothing.
Great.
Well, that's not entirely true. Right before I left, and I needed like something to. It was just constant chaos of trying to finish up everything before vacation. So I ended up like having all of Veep on in the background.
I couldn't get into that.
I really like it, but the first season is a little weak. Second season is way funnier.
Is it okay? Maybe it's worth. Yeah. It's short too. It's like 10 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, I think season two is only 10, and the first one's even shorter.
Mm. Maybe it's worth getting through that. I mean,
I think it's amazing.
I saw like the first like two, I think, and I was like, you know, I like the idea of this more than I like this.
Yeah, it's a little too dry the first season. I think it doesn't really have anything to laugh at. It's just like, oh, that's uncomfortable.
Mm. I think they probably pitched it as it's going to be just like Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's like, okay.
it definitely picks up and. Boy, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is one amazing comedic actress.
Cool. All right. Yeah, I'll have to put a little bit more time into that. I think.
But no anime. I have given myself a break from anime for the time being, and I'll be coming back real soon now.
Mm. Probably ain't nothing wrong with taking a break.
Nope.
Indeed. All right. Cool. So, have you been to the theater lately, Justin? It's been a while since we've asked you that.
Movie or play?
You know exactly what I mean by that.
What's this theater you speak of?
I saw Gravity, which was fantastic.
I'm sure it was
awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. I made the mistake of seeing it in 2D. I have to go back and see it in 3D.
You really must.
So,
yeah, I totally saw it in the IMAX, and I wasn't expecting to do that because it wasn't, from what I heard, filmed in the 3D. But then everybody said, you got to see this in the biggest screen possible in the 3D. And so off I went, and the advice was well advised.
Yeah. I saw it in 3D IMAX, and it triggered mild anxiety attacks because I didn't have any peripheral vision, really. Like, down here in Orange County, we have a... what's known as real IMAX, which is the actual giant screen, not the fake IMAX that is in most places.
Oh, yeah, I got that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Orlando has one, so I drove a couple hundred miles for that one.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's really intense. Like, I loved that movie, but I was waiting for it to end because it was so fucking intense. Like, I was clutching the armrests, But that's a sign of a good movie, so there you go. Yeah, okay, cool. And we're heading into Oscar season, so obviously we'll have a lot to talk about in the coming weeks, because a lot of stuff opens in the next, like, month or so that I'm pretty excited to see.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year, I think.
I think so. I hope so, because so far, not so much. But we got some Twitter questions about that, so we'll do that when those come around. But let's go ahead and move on to Mike. What have you been watching?
What have I been up to? Gosh, let's see. I've not taken a break from anime, but I'm tracking down all kinds of weird shit lately.
What? You? No.
Yeah, I know. Me tracking down weird shit?
That's a change of pace, Mike.
A little more off the beaten path than usual. Like, you know, I've been watching episodes of the old Filmation Lone Ranger cartoon because, of course, Lou Scheimer just died. May peace be upon him. But there was also a 1960s Lone Ranger cartoon that aired on CBS that was never released on DVD or anything. So I'm trying to hunt down some episodes of that. I'm trying to get some good quality rips of episodes of the Muhammad Ali cartoon. Because it must be preserved for all mankind.
Uh-huh.
Is it as dire as that sounds?
It's fascinatingly awful. It is barely animated. It wavers between oddly photorealistic and just garbage. It seems to have been animated by a studio that was cooked up solely by Muhammad Ali himself and his business associates. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a show that's run by people who understand the technical aspect of animation, but know nothing of the craft. And the strangest thing is, you know, in all these dumb old celebrity cartoons, usually you end up with a stand-in for at least one of the celebrity voices. No, this stuff is all Muhammad Ali himself, and like his business manager plays a sidekick.
Who animated that?
As a studio called Farmhouse Films, and I think that was their only production.
Wow.
Yeah, and also speaking of Filmation, there was a Flash Gordon cartoon that they made in the late 70s that was actually remarkably faithful to the original comics. And the thing is, the first piece of that cartoon was a made-for-TV movie, a telefilm, and they didn't air that until 1982, I think thanks to legal entanglements with the De Laurentiis people over the film. And they only aired it once, and it was never commercially released on VHS. It was released on VHS in Japan, still with the English dub, but with Japanese subtitles. I just found a copy, so I'm waiting for that to arrive.
Wow. Okay. Was that did you find a bootleg or something, or was there actually?
No. It was actually commercially released in Japan by VAP.
Huh.
So, you know, there are YouTube rips of this film. It's called Flash Gordon, The Greatest Adventure of All, but the rips are pretty terrible quality. So I'm hoping I can find something that, you know, I can make a decent 480p version out of and share with people.
I'm pretty sure that was meant. I mean, you mentioned Lou Scheimer passing away, and you can pretty much just, you can buy his book, which I'm almost positive Amazon ran out of copies, right after his death. But if you get his book, you can go through that book and just sort of, it's like a treasure trove of, oh wow, I have to find a copy of this weird ass thing that they made in 1972 or whatever.
Oh yeah, Filmation was an incredibly prolific studio. They made so much shit and so much weird shit.
The operative word being shit.
Yeah, even though most of it's very bad cartoons, it's just fun to dig through the huge stacks of crap they worked on. And, you know, for their interesting bits. Let's see. I mean, other than that, you know, for anime, I've been watching some current stuff, which we'll talk about. I've been watching a lot of Princess Knight and Marine Boy, which, you know, are their, you know, they've got that janky 60s charm going on. And I've, what else? Oh, yeah, Huckleberry Hound.
Why would you do that to yourself, Mike? Next thing you know, you're going to go down the Pixie and Dixie episode chronological listing.
Well, Daryl, Huckleberry Hound is a digest show. Each episode of Huckleberry Hound includes an episode of Pixie and Dixie.
I know.
I've already seen the racist one where they hire a judo instructor who is this so very sorry, you know, stereotypical Japanese character with big buck teeth and glasses.
I was watching that when I was 4 and I knew it sucked then.
Yeah,
There's some surprisingly good art direction, and in the Huckleberry Hound cartoons, there's at least one big weird laugh per episode. But yeah, it's incredibly bad assembly line TV animation, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I recently, you know, in that vein, recently decided, hey, I'm gonna watch Snagglepuss, and no.
Oh boy,
it's I've always kind of had a fascination with Snagglepuss, like. Who is he? All those Hanna-Barbera characters are just ripping off a celebrity from the time.
Right. Yeah, I don't know who he is. I mean, you know, my favorite of those characters is Top Cat, which is, you know, one half Arnold Stang, the actor himself, and one half Phil Silvers.
Yeah, you're that's your favorite in apparently all of South America.
Yeah, I know.
but I watched like one Snagglepuss and said, holy shit, shut up, Snagglepuss. Like, just shut up. Like, the entire cartoon is just Snagglepuss talking, and that's the joke, is that Snagglepuss talks like that.
Yeah, he has that weird third person, you know, exit stage left thing going on.
God, it's intolerable.
That always confused me as a kid because he would go in the opposite direction, left and right, and then it took me a while to realize it was his left and his right. Screw you, Snagglepuss.
Fuck that guy. I'm with you. Yeah, wow, unwatchable. Anyway, so that's a lot of weird shit, Mike.
But yeah, that's the weird shit I've been doing. You know, I'm starting to work my way through the works of Cormac McCarthy, which are, you know, very cheerful. I had already read The Road, but I just read No Country for Old Men. I'm reading Blood Meridian now. Good stuff.
Well, that's, so you like, you know, get through a couple of chapters of the Cormac McCarthy novel and then pop in some Huckleberry Hound.
And then it's time for a Yogi Bear cartoon. That's right. That's how I stay balanced.
You're a strange person.
Damn right.
Daryl, what about you?
Well, this week, I guess the next issue of Otaku USA goes to the printers tomorrow, so I've been cranking away at various anime reviews and stuff for the next issue. I did a review of a Kickheart, which we all backed. The New Ghost in the Shell, Arise. I did a Space Pirate Captain Harlock to commemorate the re-release of that, as well as the new film coming out. It's also current stuff, which we'll talk about in a bit once we get to the Twitter questions. And I was going to have an interview with Shinichiro Watanabe regarding Space Dandy and what have you, but getting image rights from Bandai is difficult, and so we won't be able to run that, apparently. Which is unfortunate, because I gave him weeks notice this time. So that is a pity, but in terms of other stuff, I mean, yeah, we've all been watching, you know, the various films that have come out. I know I've also been watching some old goofy-ass, live-action stuff, and I think that was also a Twitter question that came in, so I'll hold off on answering that one. Video games. As we are recording this, I see Arkham Origins is just unlocked on Steam, so I am sacrificing a great deal because I could be punching people as, you know, Batman one more time, as Wally Wingert is condescending to me over the intercom. And, you know, various Shootman video games have come out, first-person-wise and all that. And I've certainly been keeping up on the Japanese professional wrestling stuff. They've just come off a great show in their Ryogokugikan, the New Japan King of Pro Wrestling show, which was fantastic and is actually streaming online through very much the same methods that people can watch anime at this point, Ustream and the like. So technology is starting to sort of converge as far as all our interests pursue. And I guess since the last time, we're coming off of con season. I just came back from Anime Week in Atlanta. Where
How was that?
It's great, as always. I think it's a little bit different this year. It's starting to be a little more commercially driven because I guess some of the guests were a little more, you know, internet friendly. They had the guy who created Toho as their big guest there, and also, Moot from 4chan. So it's Toho and 4chan and under one roof. And it was surprisingly not obnoxious. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Big jump in attendance, right? They had 5,000 additional people over last year. Which,
yeah, it was almost like 19,000 people, I think, came to, you know, this con out in Atlanta that has been steadily growing year after year after year. And still great. I still love it. It's the con I go to hear about all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, Fred Schott's there giving his lectures and while I'm doing my goofy thing, you know, showing people, you know, who knows what in the panel rooms and such. A good time, you know, pretty strong attendance. They just got to get some bigger projector screens is all. Hopefully they'll get that in place next year.
Yeah, I saw that photo. That's kind of incredible that they thought that was good enough.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a couple years since I've been saying, hey, they really got to do something about this. But I guess, money and budgets and all that stuff, I guess they figure, hey, once you got one AV set up, you can just keep it for a while.
Yeah, that's true. I won't get into how sausage is made, but yeah, we did get a visit from Dave Merrill, the con chair emeritus of AWA, who's still a behind the scenes guy there, and apparently they did have some budgetary challenges this year.
That'll all be worked out for the next time. Yeah. But yeah, it's great.
Oh yeah. It's the 5,000 additional people really helped. With the whole piggy bank issue.
Yeah, tons of attendance for pretty much everything that was going on, even if it was something that even things like Otakon would barely fill a room. The same topic would be turning people away at Anime Week in Atlanta. So it's really a different sort of vibe from many other conventions that I go to. So I continue to go. It was the con I first started going to maybe 15 plus years ago, and I'm still going now. So I'm still knee deep in the dead.
God damn it, Daryl.
You see, Knee Deep in the Dead was a reference to the original Doom. Kids listening at home who are too young to have remembered playing Doom.
I looked at the guest lineup for AWA this year and was like, wow, geez, they really stepped it up. Like I had heard a lot about that con heading into it, and it's nice that they're becoming a little bit more. Noteworthy. Maybe we'll start sending people to that. If they keep it up, we'll definitely start sending
people. Well, the good thing is that you can actually get into the room, unlike when the New York Comic Con has like these huge luminaries of Japanese manga and the like, and they don't even announce them as guests on their site.
That was
nuts. Put them in the tiniest room.
Let me tell you, that was nuts. That Wiki Alive thing, they've got Kazuo Koike, they've got other luminaries. Like, these are all giants. I wish I could list them off the top of my
head. Yeah, I mean, Kazuo Koike, if I had known he was there ahead of time, I would have at least made a day trip to see him.
But he was just on the one panel, and they gave us... Like, okay, bless them for giving us an interview slot. But they gave us an interview slot that was originally, I shit you not, 15 minutes with all five people that they brought. So I was like, hey, can we maybe get some more time? And they were very generous and gave us another 15 minutes. So we got to have a full half hour with people that we've never had the opportunity to interview before.
I mean, at the same time, though, I just like, okay, you got a half an hour. Why? Were people lining up in droves to get interviews with these guys?
I don't know. You never know. You know what scheduling is like at these things. Like,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was crazy. But when they're like, hey, well, we're bringing all these people, I'm like, holy shit, you're bringing all... Can we get one-on-ones with all these guys? And they're like, no. It's like, fuck. All right, I guess you just want to talk about this Wiki Alive thing, which I don't think it's a bad idea. If people don't know what this is, basically they got a bunch of really famous manga creators and anime luminaries to basically come up with character designs and I think character names... And basically, they tell the Wikia community, here, you write the story, which I think is a really... If they can figure out a way to effectively monetize that, is probably the future of content creation on the internet.
I think they saw what everyone was doing with free, and they said, let's do this.
Actually, I think it's more Homestuck driven. I think they're looking at Homestuck.
Yeah, I would agree. Homestuck, so much of Homestuck is driven by user-created content.
Yeah, so...
I thought he kind of moved away from that after a point, but I guess I'm not as fully entrenched in Homestuck.
Well, I mean, I don't know that much about it. This is what I hear from other people.
Yeah, this is...
Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I'm just observing what I think is a trend, which is if you put the story... Like, if you put the storyline in the hands of the fans, they'll flock to it and buy t-shirts and shit. So, you're kind of stroking the ego of the fans a little bit and making them feel like they're in control and hopefully take their money. And all those guys deserve to get a nice big paycheck. So, good on them, I guess. But, it was weird. It's like, hey, here's five fucking legends in a room. You got a half hour. Okay. It was a little nuts, but I'm glad. I this year I was really not to knock the show or anything, but I was glad I didn't go to New York Comic Con. It sounded like a kind of a worse version of even San Diego.
And apparently, about as many people are showing up.
I'm sorry, Justin, say that again.
I said nothing could be as bad as San Diego.
At least the weather would be nicer.
I don't think I know anyone who went to Comic-Con just to go to the con. I think everyone I know who went to that thing, you know, had some sort of professional obligation to be there, and none of them were really that happy about it.
Yeah, you know, it's more and more these the really really big shows have gotten so big that the personal experience of it just it seems to be completely gone at this point.
I also feel like they've gotten so big that you're not really congregating with people whom you have some sort of shared commonality with. Mm. You know, they always for all the talk about oh look at all these people united in geekdom, so to speak. I'm pretty sure, you know, everyone's kind of off in their own areas doing their own things. And for some people, they're going to all this stuff. But, I mean, I know for me, I'm like, who the fuck are all these dudes?
Yeah, well, you know, these big shows, the San Diego's and the New York's, it's Marvel, Star Wars, DC, Comic-Con, or Comic-Con, what's it, Doctor Who, TV,
the things that have
TV
multi-billion
shows.
Dollar corporations,
yeah,
pushing them.
It's that stuff, and then there's sort of everything else which kind of gets shoved into a corner, and from what I understand, all the anime programming at New York Comic Con was, once again,
the tiniest room, 100 people yeah. will fit in this room, and a place that has, like, you know, six-figure attendance.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because Viz and Funimation and the like don't have a big multi-billion backer like Disney or Warner or something like
well,
that.
You know, it's funny because it's all in where they spend their money. If you go to San Diego, Viz has plenty of space, and they have a gigantic booth, and that's where they spend their money, mostly because it's closer to San Francisco, which is their home base, and it just makes more sense to spend their money there. So they buy a smaller booth at New York because they got to truck all that shit out there, and that costs a tremendous amount of money. So, you know, it's whatever region they happen to be closest to. Like, Funimation's in Texas, so, I mean, I don't know what their convention spending is like, but I would imagine they're not spending quite as much at New York as they are in, you know, Anime Expo or...
Yeah.
Oh, sure, the booth size is one thing, and of course, I'm talking about the programming side of things, where they choose
to host
these things at.
I'm kind of flabbergasted that an event as large as New York Comic Con has program rooms, like panel rooms. That, like, that you know, one of those rooms literally sat 96 people.
Yeah.
What the hell are you going to put in there?
presumably, that's where you put, like, the fan panel. Like, the fan
yeah.
room.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, fan panels, yeah, all right, that would make sense. But, no, like, at least one of the Viz panels was in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that thing filled up in 30 seconds, and they had to turn away another 400 people.
Yeah, especially when you've got, you know, yeah, with an attendance that is in the six figures, like, or close to six figures.
Yeah, even if a tenth of 1% is interested in a topic, that's still hundreds of people. So why would you ever even have a room that tiny? I don't know.
Yeah. Glad I didn't go. I'm you know, I wish them, you know, the best of luck and everything, but those huge, huge conventions, I think I might be done with them. Just, you know,
I think you get all the news within seconds of it being spoken, and so unless you really just want to go there to hang and get artist alley commissions or whatever, you can probably take a pass.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I hope they bring anime back and have that awkward award show again.
The American Anime Awards.
Yep.
But who would televise it, Mike?
I don't know. I mean,
it would go on streaming. It would stream to everybody on Daisuke.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it would just be. It would be
on Neon Alley.
Yeah.
Right after Chikara.
At one point, somebody told me exactly how much money they lost on the American Anime Awards, and I unfortunately can't remember the number, but it was not a small amount.
I mean, based on just the production value that I can see, I would guess high five figure, low six figure.
Mm.
Enough to buy a house.
They had some sponsors. I was posting some photos from that to Twitter a couple of weeks ago. And you see the backdrop where they have, like, you know, the red carpet backdrop where they have, like, all the sponsor logos on it. And you can always tell if it's a really successful event if that's full of logos, like a bunch of different companies. But this one had, like, the same three companies sort of very widely spaced apart just to fill up the white space. Yeah. That was a long time ago, though.
Sure was.
So if we're just talking about sort of either old stuff or not related to anime stuff, what have I been watching? I saw Escape from Tomorrow, which was a huge disappointment.
Bummer, I was curious about that.
Yeah, really did not enjoy that film. Justin, you kind of warned me about this, and I was like, well, I'll still see it for myself, and yep, huge regret. What a piece of shit.
Was it just badly made, or was it just...
Okay, so basically, so people who haven't heard of this, I don't know how you haven't heard of this, it's a movie that was shot guerrilla style inside Disney World and Disneyland, and it's about a guy who loses his job, and then at the beginning of the film, he loses his job. So he's taking a phone call, and the boss is like, "You're fired." And he's like, "What?" And he's on the last day of his Disney World trip, and it's all shot in black and white. And they did this all without Disney's permission, which is part of the reason that this thing has so much hype behind it, or so much buzz, is because, wow, they shot this whole movie inside Disney World without their permission. That is the most interesting thing about it. Other than that, it is a super juvenile waste of time, trying to be sort of David Lynchian, but it's so obsessed with the idea that sex and evil inside Disney World is the edgiest thing in the world, which... like, they've been making those jokes since Disneyland opened in 1955. But this movie really thinks it's going to blow your mind by, like, having, like, sexual imagery and, like, demonic faces and stuff inside Disney World. Basically, the guy loses his mind over the course of about 2 hours. It's a huge waste of everyone's time. It ends with a stupid joke. It's almost like... it was written and executed by a teenager who thinks he's being really edgy, but is just repeating jokes and sort of memes from the last 20 or 30 years.
Epic fail, Zach.
Yeah, it's really shitty. It's really shitty, man. I did not enjoy it.
It sounds like it's the kind of movie that'll make money regardless and give whoever's responsible some sort of validation to do it again.
Well, interestingly, they keep doing like, oh, Disney's gonna sue us, you better see it now, and Disney's fucking ignoring it. They're like,
yeah, completely ignoring it.
There's like this, if we call attention to this, it will just make it successful, so fuck it. I would say even if you're really curious about it, no matter how curious you are, you will be bored, pissed off, and a little insulted by the end of it, just because it thinks it's being something that it is totally not. I felt like I was watching a really bad student film for most of it. I could not possibly recommend it less.
Brutal.
But yeah, other than that, I saw Gravity. I think in the next week I'm going to see 12 Years a Slave, which...
lots of good things about it.
Yeah, I don't want to say I'm excited to see that movie, but everyone's saying it's this crazy, visceral experience that everyone's got to see. So, I mean, that's what I crave from cinema, so I'm hoping that, that's actually what it is. But other than that, in terms of old anime, like everyone's been talking about, I've been watching some VHS stuff. Buddy of mine has been uncovering some VHS tapes and has been sharing some of this content with me. So for the first time in its entirety, I saw Warriors of the Wind, which...
Did you see the trailer at the beginning of the videotape, too?
Yes.
For the Zoo Club?
I did see the trailer for the Zoo Club. Has anyone seen
famous.
That?
I have not seen the actual film. No one has seen the...
I've only seen the trailer.
I like to think there isn't a movie at all.
It's just that trailer.
Someone told me that the Zoo Club might have beaten, like, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom to be, like, the first thing that kind of made them think we need a intermediary rating.
Hey, guys, this is weird. I just typed in the Zoo Club into IMDb and nothing shows up.
Really?
Yeah.
But the trailer is, like, it's famous among title. Dorks like us, I guess, but...
I think there's an alternate title, Justin.
There is, like, Going to the Zoo Club. That's a TV series from the 90s.
Zoo Club, Zoo Gang. I mean, we might have the title.
Yeah, I think it's the Zoo Gang. Now,
usually it's pretty good about about like alternate titles. Maybe Zoo Gang. Let me try Zoo Gang.
Yeah, the Zoo Gang, 1985.
Okay.
This is totally it.
5.3.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Wow, really?
Ben Vereen. Jubilee Zoo.
Yeah. Okay.
I showed the trailer for this at conventions as a non sequitur to lead into my panels and figured it was appropriate because it was before Warriors of the Wind, and that's the only reason that anyone is aware this film exists. But
it looks like this kind of weird and very aggressively 80s movie.
Yeah. But you do see it does have a PG-13 rating, so maybe it is.
I think it
true.
Was one of the first PG-13 films. Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's like it was either like the first or it was the second after Red Dawn.
Plot keywords: hitting the crotch, bullying, homelessness.
Ultra hot, short and fat.
Yeah. Anyway, so Warriors of the Wind. If people don't know what this is, it is the infamous mid-80s edit of Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind with a crazy poster that has a bunch of shit on it that has nothing to do with Nausicaä.
Tries to make it look like
there are
Star
no
Wars.
Lightsabers in this movie?
Yeah, it's about a half hour shorter than Nausicaä, and most of that half hour is taken out of the first hour of the film. So the last about two-thirds of the movie are pretty much intact, for the most part. But they cut out a lot of the beginning, and it's a pretty atrocious dub. Starring June Foray as Nausicaä, which I...
That's not June Foray.
Are you sure that's not? Because it sounds exactly fucking like her.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't sound anything at all like her.
It sounds exactly like June Foray.
Not like Rocky.
It sounds exactly like June Foray.
That is not June Foray.
I swear to God, it sounds just like her. That was my perception. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just watched this like a couple of days ago. Maybe it's not, but anyway.
But yeah, this was the thing that sort of made Ghibli very hesitant to release their movies in the U.S. for a while.
Yeah, and it's really bad. It's really bad.
Miyazaki quote is that it's something he couldn't recognize.
Yeah, that's a little over the top. The movie it's not that different. Like, it still follows the same sort of basic storyline.
It did sort of recontextualize certain things that were bad or, you know, not desirable in the first movie to be, like, something that they want.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I don't want to downplay the fact that this is a terrible, terrible edit of a really great movie. But, you know, you can only edit something so much, and it's not like it takes things completely out of sequence or changes things around that much. Just changes all the names. For some reason, they call Lord Yupa Lord Yuppa. I don't know why they do that. And Nausicaä's renamed Princess Zandra.
Yep.
For some reason, they keep talking about injecting the God Warrior with plutonium, and I don't know why. It's really strange. There's a lot of weird little things in there, but ultimately, like, this thing is sort of infamous as being like the worst hacked up anime dub of all time, and I don't know that it's exactly that.
It's still watchable.
Yeah, it's pretty bowlerized. What's interesting is if this movie came out in theaters. So what you can do is you can go to your library catalog and search for old newspaper reviews of it from around the country. From critics who were generally very positive about it and, you know, did not detect that it was all packed up.
Yeah. But, yeah, like I said, like, the last about two-thirds of it are pretty much identical to the regular runtime of the original film.
Well, this used to air on HBO constantly. In fact, that's how I saw it for the first time. I was, like, 5.
Yeah, right.
So what other terrors of VHS have you discovered?
Not really anything too super special. He did pass along a copy, just verbatim copy of one of those $40 two-episode Ranma VHS tapes.
Oh boy, so you got to see how Yin and Yang can never be so much fun.
Yeah, boy, those Animerica trailers on those things were terrible. And also that dub, that old dub.
I never liked that dub. It's just...
Well, I never liked that show. Like, I don't really like Ron Howard.
It was before your time, to be honest.
I thought it was a shitty... Barely. It was barely before my time. Like,
I remember when I was first becoming an anime fan, I saw the Ramo and Half People, and I was like... I'm talking like I'm 13, 12 years old, and I'm like, these people are so obnoxious, I want nothing to do with these people. And that's why I watched Urusei Yatsura first, because I didn't want to be those people. And I think those people all sort of grew up or transmogrified their souls and became the Inuyasha people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a time, yeah, when I came into anime fandom, like, the Ranma people were definitely a breed apart.
Yeah.
I was always okay with Ranma. I mean, one of the first fan subs I saw was the first Ranma movie, and I still think Series 1 is a really good little TV show, but, you know,
yeah,
that's
I
like...
I like that one. Plus that's the like, movies and the OAVs.
Yeah, that's but, you know, Series 1 is like 18 episodes, and then there's another 130 episodes of you know...
just vomit.
Yeah, cheaply animated bad guy of the week crap.
I did notice that the animation was nice, but these were really early episodes, so...
Yeah, that first series is really, really nice, and then... But it tanked in the ratings, and so they yanked it.
Yeah. I was trying to remember the name of, like, what... the weird, stupid names that Viz gave those movies. Was the
yeah,
first
they
one
all
was,
started
oh,
doing Nihao things like...
My Concubine.
Big Trouble in Nekonran China.
Yeah, 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 there you go.
You
but
know,
anyway, so... The episodes that were on this tape, I only watched one of them, because I'm like, man, I'm not fucking watching... Two episodes of Ranma. One of them was, I think, the introduction of the Ryoga. The dub is really, really, really weak. To the point where the lead... Ryoga, who is sort of the lead character in the episode, keeps asking people where... he's trying to say Furinkan High School, but yeah. He doesn't hit the N. So he's constantly asking people, where's the Furinkan High School? Like, it doesn't work. Like, it just, you can't help but laugh at that, because it's just, it sounds so poor, and, yeah, that, it's just, it's from a different era. Like, I had no intention of, like, really revisiting the show on Blu-ray or anything like that, because, whatever, it's Ranma, but,
It's on Hulu now, isn't it?
Yeah, they're putting
subtitled.
A few up. Yeah, they put, like, four of them up, or something like that.
Subtitled. I still like that first season, and honestly, if you think the dub's bad... by, like, I think that's episode 6 or 7, you should see the first volume. Holy crap, that was, like,
oh, yeah.
We were
cute
cringing
is
back
not
then.
The word.
Well,
I mean, there are select episodes of that second series that do stand out as far as animation and what have
right.
you. Yeah, by and large, there's no way I'm watching through that. I'm going to go and say, find me that thing on the web dating back to, like, 1997 of, like, you know... Akane Lover 43 saying these are the good episodes of Ranma, and usually they're kind of on the mark with those.
That's the kind of show that really needs, you know, they need to release like a greatest hits, you know, DVD set with like
Ranma 1/2 Kai.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I feel the same way
it would
about
just
Urusei
be the
Yatsura.
First 18 episodes.
Yeah,
I think Urusei Yatsura. I got to think real hard to find of a bad Urusei Yatsura episode, especially in that initial 70 some that Oshii did. Most
yeah.
of those, I think, are pretty strong.
That's true.
Well,
that's true. And those are the ones I own. It's like I stopped somewhere around like volume 18 or 20.
I don't know. Ranma hits a nostalgia button for me, but I admit it's not the best series.
No, but it's just I'm kind of with Daryl. Like, I always just sort of preferred Urusei Yatsura. Like, it was just a funnier setup. I thought Mendo was funny. Like, I didn't really think Ranma 1/2 was all that funny. Like. There was like one or two gags in the episode that we watched that was that, you know, it's like okay, that's a pretty good joke, but that's it. But I would laugh out loud at Urusei Yatsura. At least I remember laughing out loud at that show. I don't know. It was just neat to see, like, okay, so someone in the past paid $39.95 to watch. This
I can understand
thing.
It. I mean, it was
yeah.
unlike any cartoon anybody
oh, sure.
had seen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it seemed so weird and foreign.
Yeah,
and you like if you knew nothing about Japan, you kind of have a half mind to go, is this what it's like over there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, as a gateway drug, it's sort of the trippiest, I guess. Like that's sort of the deep end if you're going to start somewhere. I think Ranma is like, yeah. Again, the appeal of that show is largely bullshit sitcom antics and titties, and that's kind of it. There's not much else to it.
Titties that actually belong to a guy.
Yeah, right, exactly. But anyway, so yeah, that's kind of it. A couple episodes of Noozles.
Okay, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Hey, it was... you know, it's like, hey, look at all this weird shit. And I'm like, wow.
You mean you can make the impossible possible?
The fuck is this? And that is a, like, okay, I would strongly recommend to anyone who is really into getting really, really high, like super blazed, watch Noozles. It'll blow your fucking mind.
maybe shrooms would be better.
Perhaps. I don't know. I'm not really into the hallucinogenics, but Noozles is crazy. The show is super weird. It's an old, I think it's an old Toei show, right?
I don't even know.
It was also called like The Adventures of the Little Koala.
No, no, those are two separate shows.
Those are separate cartoons.
Okay, yeah.
Dare mix them up.
That's right. These are two shows created at the height of, you know, koala mania in Japan that are totally competing against each other.
Well, so that was the other question. That was created during the height of Aussie mania in Japan, and then Aussie mania happened here, like the late 80s. So that's when we got that stuff. Interestingly, like,
kinda. I mean, there was a koala cartoon in America too in like 1980, 81. Quickie Koala.
Well, sure, but you know what I'm talking about, Aussie mania, like the late 80s.
Paul Hogan.
Right,
yeah,
you were able to get Yahoo Serious.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Oh, God.
I've seen those two words together.
Quickie Koala sounds like it's about a furry who has premature ejaculation.
You would be surprised.
Is it actually about that?
Yes.
No. No, but it is another digest show, and one of the sidekick characters is a dog who is homeless. Like the joke is literally, okay, it's Dirty Dog, and he's homeless, and he's hiding from the cops.
Well, anyway, I think
it's taking the policeman bullying the homeless man out of the park and making it into a hilarious joke.
Making it, you mean preserving it.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. I mean, God, people in charge of Saturday morning cartoons in the 80s were doing so much cocaine. Much cocaine.
Well, you know, that was the entire culture back then. But
Have you seen those cartoons? Of course they were. It's the only way they could prevent themselves from just self-harming.
Yeah.
Noboru Ishiguro, when he was in America, you know, when he came to one of the U.S. conventions, was talking about his time working on the Noozles. Unfortunately, I don't have the anecdote, you know, in memory. But it was one of those sorts of shows.
It's a weird show. Like, everyone's kind of mean to each other. Like, it's really fantastical, but things don't really make any sense. Like, the episode I was watching, it was a little girl trying to, like, spring her father from some kind of fantasy jail that had these wallaby guards. Like, it's fucking weird. Like, it's super strange. But following that, the other last thing was the Streamline now Nadia. Streamlined Nadia episodes.
Oh, with the Carl Masek didn't have the original effects track, so he just turned the volume down and talked over the opening narration.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
I also forgot, speaking of shows that I was never into, Nadia.
Nadia ends really well, and it starts really well. There's just that infamous, horrible part in the middle I recommend people skip. But
good. It always felt very obvious to me that they had no idea what they were doing story wise and were just completely making it up as they went along.
Kind of liked that about it, but yeah, I mean, you're definitely right. It picks up once they actually meet Captain Nemo and what have you, and you know the first set of episodes are, you know, okay and all. But there's a reason why I don't actually think I own it, and it's just because at the end of the day, there's maybe a little more bad than good. But I do remember distinctly watching it all back in the VHS days and being glad the way it ended. Like, I thought it ended particularly strongly. And the second-to-last episode is one of the worst cliffhangers as far as, like, that's the last episode on the tape, guys. But, yeah, Nadia, it's one of those shows. It's interesting. People talk about the history of Gainax and what have you. And it's not like people are really going back to Nadia.
No. It seems like it's basically sort of forgotten by time at this point, especially among modern fandom.
Which is fascinating, because at the time, Nadia was like the top female protagonist in all of anime, right side by side with Nausicaa.
Yeah, that show was a
big favorite.
And Nadia's
such a bitch! I'm sorry, like, there's nothing, like, I understand, like, the joke now, the only thing you can do is to say the character design of Nadia and Shinji Ikari are basically identical. Sadamoto drew effectively the same body and face, changed the hair up. That's about it. But what were people seeing in this kid? I mean, she's so mean.
Yeah, and frankly, like, for whatever, I don't, they only did one tape Streamline only did one tape of Nadia, right?
I think they did a
couple. They did three or four.
Well, what was that? Well, sort of. They were releasing them one episode per tape.
Okay.
And then they did a perfect collection where you get two or three episodes a tape.
And I think it was that's what they did when it was this isn't working. Let's just release the five that we did so far.
Yep.
It was this initiative they had called Video Comics, which was trying to make it come back every month and buy another $15 tape for 30 minutes of animation.
Yep, yeah. They did that with Tales of the Wolf.
They sure did. They did that with Zillion.
Two episodes of that and five episodes of Zillion. That was that entire product line.
Yep.
Yeah, well, this episode was, the episode that I saw was mostly Captain Nemo talking very, very slowly. And the ship was doing some kind of silent running thing. I don't remember exactly, but God, it was boring. And it just reminded me.
Did they do video comics for 8-Man After also? Because that's another thing that I know.
Yes, they did.
Okay. They just used, they used that brand on almost all their shows. But yeah, then that came out as a perfect collection.
Yep.
Yeah. But mostly just reminded me also of that kerfuffle when everyone thought Disney's Atlantis was ripping off Nadia.
That's one of those things where people just like to complain for the sake of complaining. Like, all the people talking about, oh boy, the Lion King ripped off of Kimba. Motherfucker, have you seen Kimba?
Yeah.
You know, all the people being like, oh, Atlantis ripped off Nadia. Punk, what is Nadia about? Have you seen it? No, I saw some pictures on the internet, and that's enough for me to get mad.
Yeah, yep, you're exactly right. I agree with you 100%.
I agree on Nadia. Disagree on Kimba.
I think there's some more to that criticism, but the people.
Yeah, there's a little weight to the Kimba criticism. On Atlantis, on the other hand, guys, come on, you're reaching.
Yeah. Well, they have nothing in common.
There's but a it's a brown skinned girl with funky clothes and a submarine.
yeah. It's, fuck. Anyway. Okay, so we got a lot of Twitter questions to get through, so we should go ahead and do that. Okay, let's go ahead and get to, Twitter time here. Alright. Dotto004 asks, what is your pick for best movie of the year so far?
Gravity.
Gravity.
It's been what a shitty week. Gravium
is a precious metal so rare that only five mines exist in the universe.
The universe gravium needs gravium. Or without gravity, yeah. And all travel would stop.
Future jokes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, I think as far as, awards and such, Gravity is probably going to be the one that gets recognized. I mean, certainly, as far as just, pure id and enjoyment, I think Pacific Rim has got a nod for me. I did go and buy the nerdy goofball collector's edition of that. And so I know that that'll probably either earn me points or massive demerits in the forum comments.
In terms of favorite movie-going experience, for me, it was no contest. It was the latest Fast and Furious movie.
That was exceptionally good, too.
Yeah, I mean, see that with a mob of buddies? It was just a howling hoot nanny good time. It was great.
Vin Diesel's shirt, unblemished.
Crisp and white the entire film.
I did really like Kings of Summer. That came out over the summer.
Dude, I tried to watch that. I couldn't get through it.
Really?
It was so Fox Searchlighty. Like, it felt like I was watching Little Miss Sunshine. Like, it was so, here's a totally affected indie movie.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, okay, I got it, guys.
I tried, man. I got it on your recommendation and was like, well, Justin said this was good. And it was like, holy shit, this is it's that. I saw that, and I tried to see that. And then I saw The Way, Way Back, which is sort of the same kind of way. It's like that's its own genre now.
Navel-gazing indie teen movies?
Yeah, but Kings of Summer I thought was so far into the realm of kind of bullshit fantasy that I couldn't get into it, man. I had a hard time with it. I meant to bring that up with you and say hey, what did you see in this thing?
You were almost going to say, what were you thinking?
No, I was not. What did you see in it? That's
I really connected with it. I really I really liked the characters. I thought they were believable, and even though the premise was not.
Yeah, well, maybe that's
I thought it really, really got not that this is a hard thing to get, but it really got teen annoyance with parents without making the parents look like complete assholes.
Well, I didn't finish it, so I'm not going to comment. But
how far did you get?
It was super. It was too twee for me.
how far did you get?
I got about 45 minutes into it.
Okay.
Or so. From what I recall, they had almost finished building their magical fortress in the forest. That totally fucking implausible.
If I'm going to go for totally fucking implausible, I'm going to be the one who's there for G.I. Joe Retaliation, which I also immensely enjoyed because I didn't see the trailers and didn't know it was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's me, like, you know, as a four-year-old smashing toys together and being like, yeah, all right. And totally, being really glad when, you know, the one guy shows up and, you know, blows up everything with his motorcycle and then he takes off his mask reveal. Oh, it's that guy. This is a great movie. I was the only person in the theater.
Hey, that movie made plenty of money.
It did make plenty of money, to be fair.
Yeah, I guess Gravity. I don't know. We're getting into the season, like I said, where the really good stuff starts coming out. So we'll see.
Well, here's a quick question about Gravity, Daryl. You contend that the thing about George Clooney's performance in that is that he's just being George Clooney. Well,
really distracting.
In what George Clooney movies is he not being George Clooney?
That's just it. That's part of why I kind of don't really like George Clooney, because he doesn't even seem like he's
really.
I actually really in the movie.
I really like that character he plays. That's the thing.
Well, that's why they're movie stars, is because they play themselves, and you happen to really like them.
Yeah,
it's very character actor-ish, except he's a leading man, and I think he's just a little. There's something about George Clooney that bothers me a little bit.
Well, if you want to see George Clooney, step out of George Clooney. See, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That's one of my favorites.
I did see that, but I was going to say The American, because he barely, you know.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you know, Go-Go 13 USA in that movie.
Yep.
The Quiet Man.
Well, I still contend Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, boy. I'll fight a man.
He's a Dapper Dan man in that one. all right. Tetsuan Kex asks, any of you watched the new season of Genshiken this past season? Thoughts on it? No, I did not.
And Genshiken died for me about three chapters into the first series, because it took a very different turn from what I went in expecting it to be. I was thinking, oh, it's going to be about, you know, ridiculous anime club otaku antics. And it was that for a little while, and then it became very college coming-of-age drama about people I don't really care that much about. And then by the second Genshiken series, they introduced a whole new cast of people who are not even that distinct from each other as far as what they're into. It's like, well, you've got this girl, and she's really into yaoi, and then there's the other girl who's really into yaoi. But then we've got, you know, this new member of the club who's really into yaoi. And it's like, okay, I get it, guys. And I know a couple people who stuck with it, but I also know that among the people who are hardcore into Genshiken, this is not something unique to me. There's definitely a mixed feelings about the turn in which Genshiken has taken and how it's focusing now on these new characters and these new situations that maybe aren't what we signed up for. And some people are digging it, and other people, I guess a decent amount of people, are like, yeah, thanks, I'll pass. So no, I didn't watch any of it.
I didn't either. I never liked Genshiken. I always had problems with its pacing.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of skimmed through the manga of the first series, and the thing is, it's one, like, they told a story and it was over, and then no, he just decided to keep going.
Well, yeah, I had bought several volumes of the manga because I was buying the manga at a faster pace than I was reading it, and so it took me like, I had like 9 volumes built up before I realized, oh, wait, I don't actually like this comic very much.
The one thing, Carl Horn pointed this out to me, that I think is interesting about Genshiken, is that it is like one of the only anime or manga that I've seen that has a female character, Mire, you know, the kind of heavyset girl, who is not like dazzlingly attractive. It's like even the girl who is supposed to be kind of plain looking or weird in every anime and manga out there, no, she's totally cute. Because they don't dare make the girl not cute. Well, this is one example where they actually at least try to do that a little.
Which, yeah, I guess, and to me, like, that's the only thing that's sort of in the spirit of the first season of the show. Because I really liked the first season of Genshiken. I thought it captured a specific moment in an anime fan's life when they're just hanging out with their idiot friends, getting takeout and playing stupid video games.
Yeah, but then, you know, Ono and Ogiue show up, and then it becomes entirely about them. And
that first season of the show, like, you know, barely has any of that in it. Like, it's there's girlfriends that hover around an anime club. That's not unrealistic. In my experience, that is not unrealistic. There are girlfriends, maybe you start dating someone or something like that. Like, that's akin to my experience in an anime club. But after that is when it obviously was popular enough and they wanted to make it even more popular. So they started adding elements to it. And I watched the first episode of this second season. And I saw nothing in it that made me relate to it at all or didn't feel like the original at all. And I was like, okay, well, I have no interest in this. This isn't what I remember Genshiken being, so obviously this has turned into something else, and I'm not interested in it, so never mind. But anyway, Cecil234 asks, what are your favorite horror movies, games, and anime? Okay, let's pick one of these. we got a lot of questions about horror anime, because we're taping
so close to Halloween.
Very close to Halloween. We got a question a little. I think we have one coming up about horror movies. So let's go with anime on this one. I do not have one. I people always ask about horror anime, and every time Halloween rolls around, there's always like these top 10 horror anime, and like I don't think anime is particularly good at being scary, like ever.
Yeah, I mean, my pick would be Serial Experiments Lane, which is not horror at all, but it has a really good dose of eerie to it. You know, it does eerie well, and that's what I mean.
I remember a long time ago, and well, I'd probably still sort of recommend it just because it was sort of an early introduction to the idea of, you know, maybe not horror scary, but, you know, somewhat weird and unsettling were the original Vampire Princess Mew OAVs that were released in the 90s. I always thought there was pretty good style to that. But again, I'm not scared by this stuff. You know, Hellgirl to me is laughable, and people often cite that as like, ooh, scary stuff. And it's like, no, it's just, oh no, it's a skull. there was a couple of years ago, maybe three or so years ago, a remake or, you know, retelling of Kitaro. Instead of being Gegege no Kitaro, it was the original one, the Hakuba Kitaro, which was sort of like the, you know, more sinister Shigeru Mizuki take on the yokai and what have you. That had an interesting style to it. And, you know, a lot of, you know, weirdness about that as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult thing to say, oh, recommend me horror anime or manga, partially because the Japanese horror mentality is a lot different from the American stuff, but also just because they're more about just things being like, oh, something like off-kilter and weird as opposed to, like, you know, slasher type horror.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to go slasher type horror, the only thing that immediately springs to mind is Perfect Blue.
Not Black Magic M66, Carl?
Well, no.
With the Terminator?
Actually, if we're going to stretch the definition a bit, I think my favorite is actually Genocyber.
Oh, yeah, that's actually an action horror-y kind of thing. Yeah, but I always have always had an axe to grind against horror. Haha, see what I did there? Just because I feel like the things I enjoy from that genre are never things because of horror itself. You have to actually add something else to it to make it palatable to me. It's got to be action horror like a lot of video games are, or horror comedy, things like, say, that Evil Dead versus, you know, sort of vibe about it. I can't really buy into this straight up, like, oh, God, this is horrifying sort of thing. I mean, a lot of anime makes you feel uncomfortable and unsettling, but not like the straight up, you know, ooh, horror, ghosts, or, you know, monsters, scary sort of thing. I mean, the last time we were on, I actually mentioned I thought Attack on Titan was better at, you know, the actual horror aspects than bona fide horror, even though it's not horror, because you actually give a shit about these characters. And I think that's something that's missing from a lot of horror, is that you are intentionally not supposed to feel sympathetic for these victims because you're rooting for the killers in much of modern horror things. And I just could never get into it.
Okay, well, maybe you are. don't know that I would.
You don't give a shit about the most of the cast of Attack on Titan, Zach?
No, no. Well, you said rooting for the killers.
I mean, you know, horror movie people are certainly rooting for Freddy or Jason or
horror,
you know,
movie
whoever
people
it is.
Are fucking weird. So
this is their time of year.
It is
totally. Yeah.
But Justin, that's a really good point. Perfect Blue. You know, that's a thriller that really winds up your guts, and it has genuinely scary, freaky moments in it.
Absolutely.
That's a good one. I wouldn't have thought to bring that up because you classify it as a Satoshi Kon film. Like, if you say, like, horror anime, that's not what first pops into your head. But that's
not like Lilycat.
It's a great example.
Coming soon from Discotech Media.
Oh, yeah.
I like Lilycat, but for other reasons.
I like Lilycat as well, but it's also Alien. There's many an anime.
I was going to say, was it Lilycat or Genocyber that had the scene where the alien, you know, graphically kills the cat?
Lilycat.
Oh, yeah, and the characters just placidly observe this happening and are like, wow, that's weird.
Every time somebody is horrifically killed in Lilycat, the character's just like, huh, the rusting phenomenon. There it is again. You know, look at the hull, what it did. It's like, you just saw a guy get turned into goo and sucked through a hole. Express some empathy. Nah.
Right.
Lilycat.
Okay. all right, moving on. Ludono asks... Hunter Hunter 2011 best shonen ever favorite character. I think Mike, maybe you're the only one watching this.
Well, I wouldn't say best shonen ever necessarily. I would certainly say it's the in my opinion the best Shonen Jump style anime going at the moment. I feel like, you know, One Piece has been going so long, it's kind of lost me. But yeah, Hunter Hunter, I'm into it, and the characters are like. You know, I like Bisky. I like, you know, the tiny adorable girl that can totally kick your ass. And what's his name? The guy with the pipe. I can't even remember his name. He's only been named a couple of times in the anime version, and I haven't read the manga in a while. But yeah, it's a heck of a show, and they finally moved it to late night. I mean, they're in a story arc of that series that is hilariously full of just, you know, extremely graphic death and like dismemberment and characters getting eaten. And yeah, I guess they got enough complaints on Saturday primetime that they finally moved it to Tuesdays at 2 a.m. or something like that. But I dig it.
All right, a couple of questions from Lou Dono here. Do you watch scary anime on Halloween? No, I do not.
Nope.
Sure don't.
I load up my old PC emulator and play Seventh Guest.
Hey, that's on Steam now.
not the 11th Hour.
No, 11th Hour was there. It kind of reeked of try hard to me. But Seventh Guest, I always has a nice place in my heart, not just because it's a really fairly immersive horror game, but because it's so damn janky.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
The acting
full
is
motion
so
video.
Bad. Yeah, the video is just this grainy, interlacy stuff they shot on VHS.
The spirit of full motion video caliber acting lives on in Japanese live action cinema.
But Ludono also asked, when will we get anime in glorious 4K?
Never.
Never, yeah. What? They don't even make it in 1080p now.
Yeah, I mean, the HD they call now is a misnomer even as it was, because...
It's 720p at most.
Yeah,
and 4K. A lot of times they get that 720p just by literally doubling the size of the SD broadcast and calling it a day.
I feel like 4K might be of some benefit to you know, good transfers of older 35mm stuff, but that's about it.
Yeah, anime.
They're not creating it in that resolution.
It's line art. There's a point of diminishing returns with line art.
Yeah,
you know.
I still think for the most part, unless you're getting stuff that is made for theaters, you know, SD is totally fine.
I think we're getting to a point now where, you know, the resolution is going to get so high that if you're a fan of traditional animation, you have to understand that at some point it was never meant to be seen at that resolution. You know, Blu-ray is about as high as you really want to go, even with like the super high-end Disney stuff.
And, you know, the 80s, 70s and 80s film stocks were so grainy that the effective resolution of a Blu-ray is way higher than the film is.
Yeah, so if you buy Pinocchio on Blu-ray, like the Disney Pinocchio, that looks 50 times better than it ever did on 35mm. And is about as that's as good as it's ever going to look.
Well, that was 3 three-reel Technicolor. That actually did look pretty good originally, but...
Well, no, the cleaned-up version that they have on Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Yeah, that... The just removing the dust particle effects from the cells...
Right.
...that they went through and did. Like, you know, the
not something
black,
typically done from any anime high-definition.
Yeah, yeah,
any black would be swimming with dust, so... You know, they removed all of that, and it looks better now, but blowing it up to an even bigger resolution, I don't think... You don't really want that. Like, at some point you have to realize, like, okay, I don't need this in 4K.
The additional texture of every pen movement is not going to add much to the experience.
Yeah.
I remember in the Laserdisc days, people were really proud to show off their Pioneer $100 whatever, because you could see the specks of dust on the cell.
Well, that was a thing. It was just like, holy crap,
well, and,
look
and
at that
now,
detail.
If you look at old unremastered cell animation, you know, on Blu-ray, you can see the paint strokes. That's a new version.
Yeah. He also asks if any of us own 4K TVs or are interested in them. No, I do not. No, I am not.
Hell no. Give me about 3 or 4 years before they don't cost $5,000 or whatever.
Dude,
it is that
I my main TV is a 32-inch 720p set that I bought like 7 years ago.
You know what? Most, yeah. Unless it's a movie theater size screen, you are not going to be able to tell the difference. Just
exactly.
Period. You're not.
Yeah, just the distance you would have to sit back from it is probably bigger than most space people have in their living rooms to really see that extra detail.
And, you know, most people... With their current size TVs, if you pump it 720p video, you probably can't tell the difference. You know, you might be able to fool yourself into thinking you can, but you can't. Now, do I want a 4K TV? Yes, I do. But not because it's 4K, but because the other technology has improved quite a bit over the last few years, and my TV is getting a little old.
I still have a DLP high-definition TV. So, once the bulb on it dies, you know, that'll be maybe when I have to think about getting a new TV.
Bingo.
I need to buy a new TV just as a matter of course. It's one of those things where it's like, well, I need the tax write-off, so new TV time.
I mean, for me, it's coming too, but it's just like, no, I mean, I just haven't felt any pressure to upgrade.
Well, yeah, I mean, Justin's right, like, you know... Yeah, having a 4K TV would be nice if someone delivered it to my front door. Sure, great, cool, let's check it out. But
so far, a lot of the 4K releases of films, that seems like the new Superbit scam for a new generation.
Well,
like, they're stripping out the extras and all that jazz. It's the same idea.
It's absolutely a scam because Blu-ray, it is literally no different. Almost every movie is mastered in 4K.
Right.
Unless it's a little indie or something. It is no different.
But then you get an 8K and... Oh, God.
Start throwing people off buildings.
Yeah, no, mostly I'm just happy that in terms of, quick, let's get people to buy new TVs, that the 48fps thing didn't take off. It doesn't seem like that's going anywhere.
Well,
I'm really happy about.
Amusingly, people didn't need a new TV for that. They have TVs can support up to 60 frame as input, and then it interpolates even smoother. You got that, you know, 120 or 240 megahertz thing, which looks terrible.
Oh, it looks
I bitch
awful.
And moan every time I go to someone's house and they have
it. And they have it on and everything looks like it's shot on camcorder, and I'm like, that doesn't bother you?
Yeah, they're like
what it's basically doing is making a solid black every other frame.
Well, so the only movie that anyone ever runs on these TVs, like especially like the demo mode, like if you're in like a Fry's or something and they have like the gigantic wall-sized 4K 48fps TV, the only thing they're ever running is The Hobbit, which looks like shit. Like, I don't understand how people cannot notice that what you're seeing, what the level of detail and the movement, basically what you're staring at is a bunch of spirit gum holding beards on, like... That movie looks bad. Like, you're seeing the strings at every moment. It takes you completely out of the film. I don't want that to be the future. Like, I still want, like, as much as Blu-ray is super clear and everything, the smear, like, there needs to be some difference, like, some distance between me and the film. Like, I still want there to be a little bit of magic in there where I can't see the damn strings. Like... it's distracting. Like, you know, you were saying, the movement itself on those TVs, just if you have those options turned on, it makes everything look shitty.
Yeah, and it's in everything now. But, you know, the TV manufacturers are so desperate to get people like us to upgrade because, you know, everyone finished buying their new TVs, and then people expect those to last a decade.
Right.
So, like, now they're all struggling. Panasonic's about to completely shut down their entire plasma product line.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, plasma has... You know, that has superior color reproduction, but they're big and heavy and hot and suck up a lot of juice. No one wants that anymore.
Indeed. Yeah. I think next year will probably be new TV year for me. But, yeah. Anyway, XB Saint asks, thoughts on why TV CGI anime seems to be consistently half a decade behind Canada and the U.S.?
They seem to have some idea that we need to have the frame rate of the TV CG match the frame rate of the rest of the animation, even though it costs them nothing to get those extra frames of animation when you render it on a damn computer.
You know, even when they do render it like that, Japan really never learned how to properly animate motion in CG. So everything looks either super, super smooth, and then they added the, you know, they took away the frame rate to try to, you know, dirty it up a little bit, but that doesn't work, clearly.
Well,
video games look fine.
But here's the question, though. So my question about this is that, so the frame rate always seems really chunky and like, it chunks. It moves, it looks like they're cutting frames, but the fact of the matter is, like, is that just a money-saving thing? Is that...
No, it doesn't really save any money.
But it would take less processing time to render fewer frames, right?
Now, what are you guys talking about? Are you guys talking about, like, the CG combat sequences and stuff like Tiger and Bunny? Is that what you mean?
Well, no, but, okay, so, like, did you see Arpeggio?
Tiger and Bunny is one of the better-looking ones.
Yeah. Did you see, like, Arpeggio of Blue Steel?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a new.
She's like, why would I do that to myself?
Well, that's a new. But I'm just saying, like, I was watching that and I was putting like GIFs up of it and saying, like, why is this so shitty looking? Like, why can't they make this look good?
I saw the GIFs. It's like Ruby caliber.
Yeah, it's Ruby style. Yeah, but it's a little bit better than Ruby, which looks totally terrible. But
hey, Zach, how dare you insult the majesty of Ruby? Yeah.
My fucking mistake. Now
500 comments later in
the
thread.
Now the forums are going to be fucking full of weird, obsessed fanboys of Ruby. I do not get it. But
I understand why. It's because it represents the dream, right? You know, they made their own anime. It can't possibly suck because otherwise, you know, the dream sucks.
Yeah.
Well it does. Sorry.
This is operating under the belief that Rooster Teeth is still this tiny little fan run thing, which it isn't. That's not what Rooster Teeth is.
Tiny little fan-run thing with a gigantic merchandise booth at every convention.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's I don't want to talk about Ruby, but
because it's depressing.
But the CG out of Japan still looks, in my opinion, absolutely terrible. I am so distracted by it. Like, I tried to watch that Arpeggio Blue Steel thing, and I was so distracted by it that the only thing I would have written about it was, this looks like fucking crap. How can people not think this looks like crap? Like, I can't get anything else out of the show because I'm so distracted by the fact that it looks really bad. And all of the character animation is really bad. All the vehicle animation is really bad. Everything looks terrible. And I don't understand why. Like, did they look at that and think this is acceptable? I guess so.
I don't get it. I mean, we're this many years past, you know, I remember watching Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex in 2000 and saying, wow, it looks really great, but man, those cars look super sketchy.
Yeah,
13 years later, and the cars still look super sketchy in anime. I'm like, what gives, man? It does not make sense to me.
That's a good point. It's like they've barely improved over Initial D in some areas, you know?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, like, video game CG still looks fantastic and continues to look even better, including from Japan. So I don't know is it a money thing? Is it a talent thing? I have no idea. And then,
that would seem to indicate a talent problem, you know? It's like, you know, a talent or a time frame or budgetary, you know, something.
I don't know. Justin, any thoughts?
I have no clue other than they never got it. They never got the skills down.
Yeah. Well, I hope we don't see more like the Arpeggio Blue Steel because, I can kind of handle it when it's 2D animation on top of shitty cut rate CG. Like, it's going to be mostly 2D animation, so the shitty cut rate CG will be at least sort of in the background. But the Arpeggio of Blue Steel thing, the characters are CG. That's when I am out. I'm out. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, the faces on that, you know, they always try to approximate the 2D look, and it is usually not very successful. Usually end up with things like, you know, it's interesting because think of how long ago Freedom Project was. Remember the Cup Ramen cartoon?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Katsuhiro Otomo presents on HD DVD.
That's right. Yeah. And how weird that looked. And think of how many years past it's been and how weird it still looks. They must be thinking, wow, we really got to nail this and approximate the look of, you know, 2D animation in three dimensions because we don't want to go the hyper-realistic route. And I don't know. Whatever it is they're doing, it seems like the best they can manage is when they get, like, the Final Fantasy-style approach to CG. Which, hey, not everything can look like that.
Yeah, they should just, I mean, if they're going to do that kind of CG, they should stick to the Gooda Fairies approach.
Exactly. That's really the ultimate realization of excellence in CG in Japan. And it's made by one guy using, like, stock models.
Yeah, using stock models and consumer software.
All right. Ghost of Side 3 asks, read any good American or European comics lately?
Honestly, I have not been reading American comics for about half a year now because ever since I've been getting the Viz Shonen Jump Digital, I've been reading One Punch Man, and that kind of satisfies all my American comic book style needs with its incredible approach to art and paneling and action and all that stuff. I understand that Hawkeye and Daredevil continue to be great over on the Marvel side and what have you. There's any number of good American comics, but I don't really need them. I got my One Punch Man, but now One Punch Man is on hiatus. So maybe I should start checking that stuff out again.
Yeah, I mean, I've long contended. I mean, I know there are exceptions out there, but I think by and large, your average superhero comic is nowhere near as entertaining as a typical episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So I don't pay much attention to the superhero stuff. I have been reading the Comic Saga by Brian K. Vaughan, the guy that did Why the Last Man. That's pretty neat. That's good.
I never liked anything that guy ever wrote, but everything he does is hugely acclaimed and people love it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it's, you know, it has the trappings of a space opera, but it's this weird little, you know, domestic drama.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, I never liked Why the Last Man.
So, yeah,
I never liked Ex Machina. I never liked Runaways, and I tried to read some of Saga because there was, you know, so much buzz about it, especially due to like the issue being pulled and all that stuff. But you know, I don't find any of his characters likable, and the settings are, you know, mildly interesting, but they never seem like it's realized. I feel like I'm watching, like, a Gonzo anime.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading that, and I'm reading the regular show comic by Casey Green, which is fantastic. Which the first issue opens with, people at the park having a mosh pit only to inappropriate music, and this opens a gateway to hell. Good stuff.
I didn't know Casey Green was writing those. I should...
Yeah. He doesn't do the art, but he writes it, and you can really tell. It's totally his kind of concepts.
Yeah, cool.
I got to get caught up with Becky Cloonan. I'm a huge fan of hers, and I still haven't picked up a copy of her book Wolves, which has been winning all sorts of awards.
Oh, cool. Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Well, I'll check that out. Okay. Yeah, I'm completely out of the loop. I've just been reading, like, the Fantagraphics Donald Duck comics.
Oh, I'm getting those too. Those are great. Those are fantastic.
Yeah, they're really good, man. Like, they're really good adventure comics. Good stuff.
I get kind of mad that, you know, there's all this stuff about, you know, Homestuck and all kinds of different comics fandoms, and like no one seems to pay attention to the Ducks. But the Ducks have like the most richly developed storied universe out of all that shit.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Like that's like a Sunday morning kind of a thing where it's like, when I have some breakfast, read some Donald Duck comics. And those books are really nice. Like, they put a lot of effort into making those, like, it's nice hardcover, full color, like, real nice stuff.
It was Fantagraphics who did the Peanuts collections as well, right?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, my wife collects those.
Yeah. All right.
Both very good.
DMH2148 asks, best worst surprise anime of 2013 so far?
I think Zach might be the most qualified to answer this because you've been forged in the fires of hell doing preview guide each season.
See, I don't really watch bad stuff anymore. I drop it immediately.
I don't watch bad stuff. I'm sure some people think that I watch bad stuff. So, Fires of Evil was this year, right? lots of people think that was bad. Biggest surprise was Watamote, which we did a whole episode on a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't expecting that.
Bummed I couldn't be there for that one.
Sorry you couldn't make it for that, Mike. But I was genuinely surprised at how much I attached to that show and how much I wanted to see more of it. Because I went into it saying over and over again, I'm not going to watch this. I know this character too well. It's too much. Like, I don't think it's going to be entertaining. I don't want to sit in her bell jar. And ultimately, I did. I did want to sit in her bell jar for 12 episodes. And that was a big surprise to me. I did not think that that was going to be as compelling as it was. And it was totally good. And I think people should definitely seek it out. But we did a lot.
Yeah, I'm all about the real dark side of the nerddom as opposed to like the fangasm bullshit.
Oh God, please don't start with fangasm.
Favorite show.
It's
you really have to bring that up. A show so bad that they didn't even pirate it.
It's dead. It's dead. It's dead. Look, it's dead now. It's dead now. They killed it. They strangled it in the crib.
It's Halloween. It could a hand could burst forth from a tombstone.
And it's Stan Lee. Oh god. But I guess I would say that was the biggest surprise for me. Anybody else have one?
I'm at the point where I'm like, Mike, I don't really have too many instances of surprising myself. Normally I'm like able to kind of judge, okay, I'm gonna like this and I will, and it's only very rarely where I something passes me by and enough people say, hey, you got to check that one out, that I actually go back to and it's like, oh wow, that was good. I'm drawing a blank as far as what that would be for this year.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like lately it's been very easy to look at preview guides and look at who's animating what and figure out what the good shows are going to be, or at least what the shows I like are going to be. I would say that, out of this group in this year, Watamote would be one for me, too, because, I didn't turn my nose up at it, but when I was first reading about this, I thought, well, this seems kind of run-of-the-mill. Then the more I learned about it, the more I was just like, oh, no, this is actually going to those dark places. I think I'm going to want to watch this.
Yeah, I would say it wallows in those dark places.
Yes.
It gets there and it stays there.
Wonderful. Real as hell.
Yeah. All right. Rhetorical Noise asks, how often, if ever, do you guys read or consult the growing body of anime and manga scholarship being produced in English?
I don't really like a lot of the anime and manga scholarship being produced in English because I feel like a lot of it is just bad scholarly work. I feel like a lot of it is people with preset conclusions and then cherry-picking evidence that supports the conclusion, and I feel that sort of runs counter to what academic scholarship is supposed to be. I feel like a lot of these people may be very good as far as being scholarly writers and doing academic research. I just feel like most of them don't have the anime background that is needed. And there's very few writers who I feel have the anime and can write about it well. And a lot of them aren't necessarily people who are entrenched in academia. A lot of times I get a lot more out of reading things written by longtime fans who have, context, people like your Fred Pattons and, hey, Mike, what's going on? Your work is great. I'm also a big fan of the things Carl Horn writes, but those aren't academic.
Yeah,
journal.
It's enthusiast press. Yeah. And I would tend to agree. I think it's hard to find really good, really rigorous academic stuff.
A lot of it's very navel gazing.
Well, what irritates me about a lot of it is that there's a lot of what gets passed to me as like, oh, hey, you should check this out. It's always popular show, and then let's figure out how to contextualize this with Japan as a nation.
Yeah, their sample set is a little too small. Like, okay, I'm going to use this as representative of some large sweeping phenomenon, and my sample set is Ramna 1/2 and Legend of the Overfiend or something like that.
What I'm talking about is recently somebody linked me to something where somebody was talking about, Attack on Titan's really popular. what does it say about Japan as a nation since Hiroshima? And it's like, fuck you. Like, nothing. It doesn't say anything about Japan as a nation since Hiroshima. Like, stop. Everything has to fucking be about World War II with some of these guys.
Yeah, and it's only Leiji Matsumoto where everything has to be about World War II.
Right, exactly. Like, there's that's perfectly fine. Like, if you're talking about Leiji Matsumoto and you want to bring it to World War II, okay, fine. Yes, he's probably referring to that. But most other things, most other popular, like, super populist entertainment in Japan, like Attack on Titan, stop just desperately stretching to relate it to the Japanese population or mindset as a whole. Like, they have populist entertainment, too. And it always reads like a stretch to me. Like, sometimes maybe they've got a little bit of a point, but most of the time, yeah, like, I'm like, okay, I don't want to read your thing about how, well, if you really think about it, the Titans are a metaphor for the atomic bomb. And it's like, oh,
I feel like the only book that is, you know, kind of an academic book that I have in my collection is the God of Comics Tezuka book by Natsu Onoda Power. Have any of you guys read that?
I've heard of it. I think at one point I had a copy.
It's good. It's pretty comprehensive. It's very dry. I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's one of those. Part of why I haven't paid that much attention to the academic writing is just because, yeah, it's, you know, I'm not studying this from an academic standpoint. I come at this stuff from an enthusiast standpoint, and I feel like, you know, if the writing about it has a lack of excitement or lack of vigor, it starts to lose me.
I'll say two things just to put like a little silver lining on this. There are at least two people I know who are pretty strong enthusiast fans who are in the academic field and are approaching anime from that, who I do feel at least have the background for it. So Carl Lee, who is listening to this, and probably my co-host Clarissa Graffio from Anime World Order also is fairly knowledgeable about the anime, extremely knowledgeable, I'll say that, and are studying anime at the graduate level and writing papers about it. So I do look forward to reading their stuff once they actually publish.
Well, I want to stress, I'm not saying it's all worthless and that, you know, it all sucks and they don't know what they're talking about. It's not what I intended to say. It's just that so much of it is the same stuff. It feels like, Daryl, like you were saying, like, they don't really have, like, a great knowledge of the history of the medium itself, and it always has to, in my experience, always has to tie into Japanese social studies, basically. Like, I get tired of that. I really don't want to read about how, well, if you, Idolmaster is really about, you know, the Battle of the Bulge, or
it's this really bad kind of, like, borderline racism that you can't talk about art from another country from an individual's perspective.
Yeah, like you can't.
They have individuals over there. It's not one big hive mind.
Yeah, well, and you're exactly right, and that's a really good point. And and nowadays, like, I notice, like, in forums and stuff, we get a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, you can't judge this piece of entertainment based on your moral standards or your ethical standards. It's from another country, and if you don't really understand the Japanese people, you can't really say one thing or the other about something.
And I understand the Japanese culture because I played the Dream Club game for PS3.
Yeah, well, and that's like, it's art. It's art. We're all human beings. Like, art comes from a place, like, not to get too abstract here, but it comes from the soul, and it's recognizable as art. And even entertainment, like simple entertainment, it's not like this alien thing that came from another species. It's recognizable as something created by a human being. Therefore, you can respond to it as a human being. And it doesn't have to be this stupid cultural relativity, you can't possibly understand it because you're not Japanese thing.
Unless you're Armand White being really mad at that first episode of Serial Experiments Lane because he thought that one girl was black.
Yep. That happened. I was there.
All right. The Wizster asks, any movies you're looking forward to this winter? Yeah, plenty.
Am I the only one looking forward to that movie where Johnny Knoxville puts on an old guy costume and shits everywhere?
That comes out tomorrow, doesn't it?
Thinking about it. Yeah, it does.
It
looks like it'll be fun to watch, but, you know.
I will fully cop to being totally stoked for Anchorman 2. Trailer that just came out was fucking phenomenal. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I really want to see Her. That's a new Spike Jonze movie.
Oh yeah, I really want to see that. Although he is so hit and miss.
He's only made 4 movies.
And he's already been very hit and miss.
You're right, but he's made some masterpieces.
It's true.
But the reviews already are sort of out for that one. I think Variety reviewed it already, and they said it was really good. So
he's also made Be Kind, Rewind.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Wait, that was Michel Gondry.
Gondry, who gave us also The Green Hornet.
Yeah. Michel Gondry is way more hit and miss than Spike Jonze.
Talk about hit and miss. I mean, I love The Science of Sleep, and what was the other one you did?
Not me. Science of Sleep, oh God.
Science of Sleep and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. That's one of my favorite science fiction movies ever.
Yeah.
Eternal Sonshine is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spike Jonze was being John Malkovich. And,
right. Adaptation's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah,
I do appreciate Adaptation. I don't know if I would watch it multiple times, but I appreciate it.
But yeah, no, plenty of stuff. I'm excited. I guess The Wolf of Wall Street is actually coming out this year. It's a Martin Scorsese flick with Leonardo DiCaprio playing Wall Street guy. I was kind of, as much as it looked like schmaltzy sort of stuff for your grandpa, I was excited to see Monuments Men. But that got pushed next year.
I know, Zach, you're also really looking forward to seeing Tyler Perry's A Maida Christmas.
Medea. Not Maida. Not Maida. Like, you know, Maida Casey or Maida.
That was a weird slip.
Guys, be honest, guys. Have any of you seen any of the Medea movies?
Yes.
Of course. Oh, you have? Okay. Wow.
Mike, come on.
Yeah, people at work talk about them nonstop and love them to death. And
well, I mean, Daryl, you've made the controversial observation that, like, Tyler Perry movies and Wes Anderson movies are similar movies for different audiences. That is bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think I ever said that.
You didn't? Really?
No, I could have sworn
you made
that
comparison.
No, I think what I said is that the reaction people have to the mystification that people are really into Tyler Perry movies is very similar to the reaction a lot of video game people have to people who are super into Nintendo.
Okay.
Like, you know, they're are for very specific audiences that are generally underserved.
I feel like someone said that and it made me so angry because it was just like those, you know, the entire tone and target of those movies are so different.
I've seen actually a weird amount of Tyler Perry movies. I think maybe I've mentioned this before. I have a thing where if I check into a hotel and turn the TV on and flip to a channel that's showing a movie, the odds that it will be a Tyler Perry movie are really high. I don't know why.
Did you see Tyler Perry Action Man and Alex Cross?
I did not see Alex Cross, but I've seen by hotel TV alone. I have seen Why Did I Get Married? Why Did I Get Married 2? Diary of a Mad Black Woman. I think I've seen Medea's Family Reunion. I think that's what it was called.
Oh, you've seen a lot of them.
Yeah, I've seen I've seen at least 5 or 6 Tyler Perry movies. And they are really fucking weird. And, like, they're really strange films.
The weird Jack Chick morality.
Yeah, it's got a... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's got a Jack Chick morality to it. They're strange. And I actually, you know, people who are just interested in auteur cinema, he is an auteur, absolutely.
Yeah.
You may not like what he's making, but he's an auteur. Yeah, Tyler Perry movies are fucking weird. but anyway.
See, the new Hunger Games, I will freely admit I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't deal with the first one's camera work.
It's a pretty cheap-looking movie.
Oh, they did not spend a whole lot of money on it.
I don't know, man.
It's a pretty cheap movie.
I blazed through those books, and that it just killed my interest in seeing the movie. I didn't feel like seeing the movies would offer me anything new. And first movie on Netflix, and it was just like, yeah, you know, it didn't surprise me at all.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the charm. You can not read those books, and then you can go into seeing the movie fresh.
I always typically see the movie and then read the books because exactly what Mike just said.
And even better...
I read the books before they made the movie, so
even better. I can't believe they're still getting funding to make these terrible movies. Those two guys that make all those like epic movie and
they're making like the Hungry Games or
the Starving Games or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just like what? How can they milk that much out of one movie? You know, it's just going to be unwatchable.
Those things cost like $5 or $6 million to make, and they make like $15 or $20 million.
Yep.
Simple mathematics.
Just for nerd to at least talk about something
the nerd cinema
remotely nerdy. I'm pretty well looking forward to Thor. I like the first one a lot. And
yeah, I'll totally see that. Really? I'll totally see Old Boy and 47 Ronin and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to Old Boy. But Thor, I mean, I thought Thor was pretty good, but it's like I felt like that was about as good as a Thor movie was going to get.
My favorite part was when Anthony Hopkins seemed to just lose his accent and scream, "But you're not king!" Like, that's the line that sticks with me throughout all of Thor. I know all the ladies are all about the greasy British dude. But,
yeah, but the thing I like about
greasy
Thor...
Greasy British dude? Hey, don't you talk about Idris Elba like that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The thing I like about Thor is that the aesthetic of it is so crazy 80s fantasy, and I like that, and it's very entertaining to me. And
I did love the set design of it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because the story details are all from the Walt Simonson run of Thor, which is, that was 70s.
Well, that's neat too. I like all that stuff. Like, it seems like there's something weirdly retro about it. And it appeals to me, and I enjoy it. And frankly, like, of all those characters, like in the Avengers, like, I like Thor the best. Like, it's my favorite. So, you know, sure. I'm excited about the new Thor movie.
I'm a Captain America guy, but I did not watch the new trailer, which apparently has underwhelmed many.
All I've been seeing is like crazy praise for it, and me too.
I've been seeing the praise, and I was real tempted, but I turned it off after 5 seconds because I just know they're going to show shit from the end.
Because whatever, you're going to see it anyway.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing these movies. There's no need for me to know anything about it.
It's the whole dynamic of when they show a big moment in the trailer. You spend the whole goddamn movie wondering,
waiting for that to happen.
I wonder when they're going to get to that thing, and then you realize it's the finale, and it's like, oh, for fuck's sake! You showed me the whole thing, you know, 6 months ago.
Magneto is going to pull a submarine out of this water.
Yes, god damn it!
All right. Moving on.
I was so mad
on
when that happened in that movie, and then there was nothing after it.
We got to move on here. All right, Fig Newton asks: some circles have equated the fan service of Kill la Kill to shows like Want to Be the Strongest. Panel commentary would be welcome.
They're absolutely off base on that.
That's
I think that Kill la Kill, the difference between what's going on in that versus what Want to Be the Strongest is what can you, the viewer, see and what is the camera focusing on? Actually, as a matter of fact, immediately before this podcast began, I just watched the latest episode of Kill la Kill, which I think is going to get a lot of negative talk from people because it does have still frames in it, and I know that's considered like, you know, oh no, they ran out of money, et cetera, but as far as directorial style, where the camera is framing, what your eye is supposed to fixate on in the individual shot compositions of Kill la Kill is worlds different from what you're supposed to be, you know, drawn to and want to be the strongest, which in the case of the latter is boobs and butts. And crotch.
It's just not all created equal, and that I've seen I saw the first episode of I Want to Be the Strongest, and
I've only seen screenshots. It just looks gross to me. The characters look badly drawn.
That show is about sexual humiliation. It is for rape fetishists,
and that's why I can't watch. I didn't even watch a single episode of it.
That's who it's for. It's for people who get off on women who are struggling and in pain while also being sexually compromised. It's fucking disgusting.
And here's the thing. I wanted to bring this up in a future question, but now that we're talking about it right now, that is one of the shows that is being watched and followed by certain media outlets that don't typically follow anime. It's actually being covered by the pro wrestling news sites that don't know anything about Japanese animation and stuff. And their reaction to this is like, what the fuck is going on with Japan? And these things add up as far as like influencing the perception of anime to non-anime people. You know, that and what's like the top shows on Hulu. If you look at anime, what's the top shows on Netflix? They're kind of this united front of creepy shit. And yeah, I don't know what to do about that.
Not a whole lot we can do.
No, not very much. But if you ever wanted to know, like when you go to those big pan media cons and anime doesn't really have a huge place on the marquee, that's part of it. Yeah. These are the shows representing anime.
Yeah, and I touch on that in my latest column, which is just like, you know, I'm not like horribly upset that Queensblade exists, but I don't want anime to be about stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't want the perception of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've been saying this for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's been happening for 7 or 8 years, wave, and this is where we are.
As wave after wave of, you know, Ikitosen sequel has passed by.
Yeah. Ugh. And, you know, it's always got to be something so distasteful. It's either like, well, okay, so I don't want to say somebody like, tell somebody like, well, I work with anime for a living, and they pull their children away.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you watch the show where girls pee themselves every episode?
Yeah, like,
there's a show.
God, I wish you were kidding.
Daryl, that doesn't even narrow it down.
No.
it's like at least 5 of those in the last couple of years. Ah, God. Okay, anyway.
But yeah, you're going to get the comments and the angry Twitter posts about your moralizing one more time. Mm-hmm. But it's not that it offends me. It's just that the show is bad.
It's a shitty cartoon. Yeah, that's the problem.
Just at this point, I'm super used to the how could I not be used to the forum and the Twitter and the, you know, oh, you can't tell me what's right and wrong. It's like, well, okay. you still you're vehemently defending a garbage cartoon that is for basically rape fetishists. Like, that show is, there's no defense of it, in my opinion. Just no defending that show. Kill a Kill, on the other hand, I like that show a lot. I think it's really good.
Yeah, there's a fine line between Kill a Kill and Project Aiko. I mean, as much as everyone talks up the Gona Guy tribute, which it certainly is, I mean, I remember in the 90s when I first saw Project Aiko, and I didn't know that it was supposed to be a parody or a comedy. I just thought, like, oh, this is awesome, and there's some jokes in it. And I look at what's going on in Kill a Kill, and it's very similar in terms of, you know, what's actually happening. But tone is a little different, and I'm trying to really formalize that, and I'm not quite there yet. But it's something I'm, you know, mulling around in my head as I watch the series.
All right. Speaking of which, Scotty415 asks, Kill a Kill have any chance of airing on Toonami? Nope.
Nope, because it's anime, and they don't want to really show anime when they can show their own stuff.
Well, yeah, that's what it boils down to. If you know, they could take any anime, and it would get made, you know, the best TV anime and most popular stuff of the past 10 years would still not get as many viewers as a Family Guy rerun. So why should they?
Okay, this sort of discounts the fact that Toonami still runs, and they show anime there, and they pick up new shows every now and then.
They pick terrible things like Sword Art Online.
Well, you're right, but, you know, that was a huge hit, and
I'm curious about how many people are watching Toonami at this point, though.
Well, they put the ratings
out. They post the ratings. Yeah, it's like, I mean, you know, it's usually like a million people.
You know, which is...
Really? Pretty, well, know, that's not bad. That ain't nothing.
Yeah, it's, like I said, like, Toonami exists. It floats. It's there.
Well, that's a good leap of faith by them, because, I mean, I maintain, yeah, I'm pretty sure that you could take any random Family Guy episode and put it in the same time slot, and you'd get double the number of people.
You could, like, but that. They do that every night, and so that's why Toonami is on Saturdays, and that's the time slot where they're like, okay, well, you know, we'll take a small hit in viewers, but at least we're showing something else, maybe? I don't know. But no, Kill a Kill, it's too risque.
I think that's a little too extreme. Yeah. I mean, we got Gurren Lagann on TV. I think that's about as far as they're going to go in that direction.
Yeah. All right. Scotty415 also asks, Funimation recently said a show has to be released on DVD before it can air on Toonami. Any reason why you think that might be?
Probably has to do with just the way that licensing rights work out.
It didn't used to be the case. I mean, Big O came out on TV before it came out on DVD.
Yeah, same thing with Cyborg 009 and a lot of things. Like,
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, we're talking decades past now.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
There could be a number of reasons, anywhere from... It's probably not licensor, and it's probably either Funimation's edict or Toonami wants to see the video sales numbers before they'll take a look at it.
That makes sense.
You know, I'm still... So Aniplex sends me those Sword Art Online box sets so I can send them out to reviewers. And I'm still baffled by the fact that they give you postcards and an art book. And the postcards...
And the art book consists of exactly...
Has the same
postcards
art. Why? What are you going to
do? Who is actually mailing these postcards out?
and for this privilege, you're effectively paying double, you know, what the going rate for any other show.
Yeah. Indeed.
I don't get it.
But anyway, all right, I'm going to truncate this question. Zump One asks, what's an anime that you like that everyone else seems to dislike?
That's kind of most everything.
Yeah, I know. God. I wouldn't say that it's an anime that everyone seems to dislike, but it's anime that people just aren't that into, you know?
Well, my answer for this is Macross 7.
Yeah, I don't.
That's a good answer.
I think Macross 7 has really started to turn around as far as fan reaction to it. I think at the time it came out, Macross 7 was this reviled thing. It was like, oh, what the fuck is this doing to the Sanctity of Macross? And then given time, people love Macross 7. The same thing happened with G Gundam.
Wait, back up.
Who loves Macross 7?
Other than Zach. Okay, the general.
I say I love it, but after that first, the speed bump of the first episode,
there is no general reaction to it. No one's fucking seen it. I'm talking about
the mecha nerd fandom base in English-speaking world.
Yeah, I was going to say that thing's been fully fan subbed. The OVAs are really watchable. The Dynamite OVAs, those are good.
I mean, yeah, I would say a lot of the people who are currently English-speaking fans that follow things like Tokusatsu and mecha things, at the time, they were the people who even had awareness that Macross 7 existed. They didn't like it. In 2013, by and large, they do like it.
Yeah, it's not the pariah of the franchise.
It's not like the third Lupin the Third series, which I think now that it's on Hulu, some people are going to start maybe appreciating it more.
I dig it. I'm watching it. It's great. It's signature Lupin. It's kind of a different look for the show, a different tone, but it's the same characters. It's the same formula.
Yeah, that was me uploading those episodes to Hulu.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
And I've only watched bits and pieces of them because, you know, I was having to turn them around so fast. But the guy I had working on the subtitles for him, he was like, man, there are some episodes in here that are really just dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People totally get killed in it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, it's one of those weird, Showa era anime shows for adults where it's like they have to fulfill the quota of the one topless scene per episode.
No matter how shoehorned in it was.
No matter how shoehorned or just, completely unnecessary. Nope, someone has to lose her shirt. For just a second.
And that someone is Fujiko.
Usually Fujiko, but not always.
Okay. Let's see, I think mine is the humanoid.
Right.
You just like coffee a lot.
You know, I can't even drink coffee anymore. For medical reasons, but...
Oh, okay.
I don't know. The humanoid is just this silly mixture of 80s cheese and terrible plot points and power rock ballads, and I just like, I don't know, I dig it. It's just, I can't watch it without having a stupid grin on my face.
I feel like people have been hassling me on Twitter about a couple of shows that I've been trumpeting, and I can't remember what the hell they were. I mean, but no, there's always something in my portfolio that I talk up and have people ask me what the hell is wrong with me.
I feel like a lot of people, like, I'm the only person in my personal circle who really likes The Dagger of Kamui. Everyone else finds that movie long and intolerable.
Rintaro in general. There are plenty of obvious exceptions, but I enjoy his body of work, and I know a lot of people who will barely watch anything of his.
Do you like the X movie?
I think visually it's beautiful. If they released that on Blu-ray, I would buy it just to watch with the sound off.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. That's a good screensaver anime.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, same thing with
Metropolis Blu-ray.
Yeah, I was going to say Metropolis, on the other hand. No, I legit love that. I realize in some ways it's a little simplistic. I don't care. Awesome movie.
Okay, let's move on here. The Omidon asks, where do you draw the line between series being inspired or influenced by another and being a copycat or a ripoff?
I draw the line at, does a series actually bring something new to the table, or is it just this?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think also this is one of those things where you know it when you see it. You can tell when something is just trying to lift and versus something being inspired by. I don't have any problem with somebody lifting ideas or building on ideas. I guess maybe that's it. If it builds on it, then great. Otherwise, it's kind of a ripoff. If it's just copying, you can kind of tell, though. It's not that... Maybe I'm not giving a great explanation of exactly how you can tell, but you can tell, when something is just a rip,
Yeah, of course. I'm now just thinking, okay, so what would some recent examples be?
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people often Omidon. He's definitely a mecha guy, so he's probably thinking of things like, say, how do people perceive the newer generation of mecha things like Code Geass and Valver the Liberator and all that sort of things? Are these ripping off or what have you.
Yeah, that's a complicated question. I feel like Valvrave has feet in both ends of that.
Well, I mean, so like Hope was just watching Guilty Crown out in the living room, and
also a good example.
I would have called that a ripoff of Code Geass because it repeats most of the themes of that. But oh, it's just the same guy repeating himself yet again.
I would say the same thing about, you know, if you compare Sword Art Online to Excel World, you know, same author.
Sure.
It's one of those. Yeah, it retreads some of the same ground.
Yeah, a lot of people are getting mad that people are slagging on, what is it, Log Horizon, because, oh, it's another, you know, you're in the game and all that stuff. But, oh, this one's different because now when you die, you respawn, dude. And
wasn't that Batum show also a you're in the game series?
Yeah,
that would be one popular trend.
There was a guy in we had a thread recently where there was a guy in the forums vehemently saying, like, this you're in the game is not an overused thing because you can only list one or two shows that actually do it. People would say, like, well, what about Batum? And he's like, well, it turns out that that's not actually one of these things because blah, blah, blah. Something you would have had to have watched the entire show to know. And it's
that's hilarious. That's an old enough trope that, like, you know, the Hunter x Hunter did that in, like, 1994.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching freaking, like, in the Tsukasa Kotobuki 90s dark eras of, like, NG versus Knights Lamine and 40 Fire. It's like, okay, you're stuck in the game for an entire show. And that was a sequel to a previous show where they were stuck in the game.
Like, all right, Greed Island, I don't think that was 94, but that was, you know, at least 10 years ago.
Let's see here. Ian G. Harper asks, what anime have you seen or like to rewatch always reminds you of why you like anime so much?
Megazone 2-3 Part 1.
That's a good one.
There are a lot of them, but for me, it's always Megazone 2-3 Part 1. That's the one that if I ever try to rip a clip from or reference something in there, I put it in, and I'm in immediate danger of losing 75 minutes to watching the whole thing.
I'm like that for Robot Carnival.
Robot Carnival's so uneven, though.
It is, but I mean, the segments of it that I like. I mean, I'm not sitting there being like, oh, time to watch Cloud again, and, you know, a lot of people like that one, but like not Cloud. Me.
I will happily go without seeing Starlight Angel again.
Okay, see, that's the one that I like a lot. So, you know, that's the thing that's part of what does it for me with those anthology pieces, that people can't necessarily agree on what their favorite or least favorite one is, that shows how much variety there is. And that's part of what I'm trying to often sell to people as my general message when I'm doing stuff at anime cons, is that there's a variety of stuff. It's not like the same set list of tropes or what have you. So, I mean, a lot of things like that, especially things you see early on that maybe aren't being done so much anymore. Like, I can get drawn into Area 88, the original OAVs for that.
Those are really atmospheric.
Yeah, and yeah, it's definitely colored by what you saw when. I mean, Megazone 2-3 was one of those. I saw it on VHS Raw with a friend of mine breathlessly explaining the story next to me, and it just blew my goddamn mind.
Yeah, Giant Robo, like, is that for me.
Mm-hmm.
My stuff's pretty predictable. Like, if I'm feeling really burned out, I'm like, well, gosh, do I still love you, anime? And, it's like, no, it's a little Escaflowne, a little Wolf's Rain, you know, and then I'm set. It's like, oh, yes, I do. Of course I do.
Half-Cross movie is also one of those for me, the Do You Remember Love? But we've talked about that in the prior episodes.
Yeah.
I don't have a go-to. There are a couple I really like.
Dog of Flanders, Justin?
Yes. Anything involving children suffering.
What's Your Name asks, will anime ever be considered cool again like it was during the early 21st century?
Maybe slap bracelets will come back in, like how every once in a while and someone's got a warehouse of those.
No.
And then there'll be some retro, hey, remember anime, guys?
It'll come back. It's all cyclical. I mean, I don't think it'll be it won't be the same as it was exactly, but no, it'll come back.
Well, here's the problem.
I mean, it's already much more popular than it was back then. It's just, you know, it's not cool popular.
Well, the problem is that most of it is, like, you know, clear nerd pandering now, and, you know, you just watch it and you're just like, well, clearly no one who is, you know, it's very clear replacement for girlfriend stuff.
Right. It's just like what we were talking about as far as when we were discussing who want to be the strongest and getting coverage on non-anime sites. It would have to be once that wider audience starts seeing shows that are actually better somehow. Right.
Exactly. Well, not even necessarily better. Like, actually, I was just working on Outlaw Star for the UK market, not for here. And you know, I was just going through it, and I was just like, holy shit. And I was never a big Outlaw Star fan, but I was just watching, and I was like, god damn, this show is such a bro anime.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, but, and then someone tweeted back to me, is like, well, they all were back then. And I'm like, yeah, they all actually kind of were appealed to this American bravado alpha male sort of thing, and they don't really make a whole lot of those anymore.
I do think there is at least a part of that accessibility and things that sort of cut through the noise. And part of that is things that aren't too, quote, Japanese culture specific tend to be the ones that make anime, quote unquote, cool.
Well, sure. I mean, no one is going to get all excited about a show that deals with yokai.
Or high school.
Ooh, well, there we knocked out 95% of anime being made.
I mean, there's one big mistake that I think about sometimes is, you know, Outlaw Star. That came out, and people loved it, and were like, okay, can we get more? And Taki Ito Ito was like, yes, I'm working on a sequel. And, yeah, 15 years later, nothing.
Yeah, they're real bad at capitalizing on international success, and I'm not sure if it's just because the money incentive isn't there, that the international revenues bring in are kind of a drop in the bucket compared to what the otaku set want.
Yeah, they don't get much of that money.
I mean, I'm amazed we got that Trigun movie. It's a wonderful, excellent movie. It took way too long to get here. It took way too long to get made. Where was that 10 years
ago? Yeah, that thing was basically stillborn in terms of popularity and success. Like, you know, people were like, yay, Trigun, and it kind of came and went. Like, you know, when you say Trigun, I still think of the TV show, and it's like, oh, yeah, and then they made that movie, like, 10 years later.
10 years later. I mean, yeah, if that thing had come out...
I think that's kind of rewriting history. I think Trigun was incredibly hot internationally for a good half decade.
That wasn't my point. The movie itself, when it came out, it was a little stillborn.
Oh, right. By the time it came out,
that's what I meant.
Moved on.
Yeah, I was agreeing with you.
It took too long, and then its candy was gone to, you know, steal a catchphrase from a popular cartoon.
Right.
That's the problem whenever you are dealing with a sequel to a show that doesn't become a classic.
Sure. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But I think, Justin, I think you're absolutely right when it comes to the whole, like, so much of this stuff to even a casual observer is, I don't have a girlfriend. I'm going to watch this. So much of it is so steeped in that, and that's, you know, that's never going to get any kind of international traction.
Or respect, really.
It's not going to be held up as this amazing thing. You know, the people who love it and defend it are the people who, you know, it's aimed at, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not widely accessible, and so much of anime is that now, and, well, there you go. I don't know. It's a little depressing. But anyway. Okay. What do we got left here? We're wrapping up here pretty soon.
Yeah, I gotta pee, man.
Yeah. Akatsuki BK asks, we've all seen Akira numerous times. How much more significant story is in the manga, and is it worth tracking down? Well,
the answer is a lot of significant story is in the manga, and it is totally worth tracking down. Dark Horse still has it in print. I totally forgot at the opening of the show, in the next Otaku USA, I'm totally reviewing the 25th anniversary of Akira release. Mm,
yeah.
God, 25 years.
Let's not assume that we've all seen it either. It's very interesting how many people haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. Every year when I go to cons, I say, who's never seen this, when I show a clip of Akira? And over half the room is usually raising their hands at this point. A lot of people just have never seen the movie. And to then not even know about that there's a comic that goes way further than the movie and much more in depth. And I like both of them quite a bit. But it's long been my observation that the people who are like, oh, yeah, the manga's so much better than the anime, man, they haven't read the manga. When pressed. But yeah, I think it is totally worth reading that manga. It's not that one replaces the other. It's they're different beasts.
But I will say, if the anime kind of leaves you cold, and there's a lot of people that it does, I don't think the manga is significantly better enough to win you over.
I can see that, yeah.
Like, you know, I love the movie for mostly nostalgic reasons, but I think it's a very problematic piece of work.
Use that word, Justin. Tumblr took that word away from us.
Problematic?
Yeah. No, I understand what you mean. It's flawed. It's
piece
got,
of work.
You know, some issues with it. Those issues were certainly exacerbated by the streamlined dub because the script wasn't very accurate.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just completely forgot about that because it's just – it's almost impossible to follow with the old streamlined dub. But
yeah, when you mention nostalgia, that factors in. A lot of people, they want that streamlined dub, and they're getting it finally.
They're probably going to go back and it's like trying to rewatch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when you're 30 and you're just like, oh, this is not as good as I remember.
I do think the voice acting, like the actual performances, are better in the streamlined dub than the Pioneer one.
Man, maybe, we're going to the Olympics!
Exactly.
Maybe, but at the same time, you know, they're mixing up who's speaking.
Yep, that's true. I mean, that's always been the problem with streamlined stuff, is that, you know, script fidelity wasn't really there, and a lot of times there's just things like, hey, you missed a line, or this person was supposed to say this instead of you.
Well, it's not even a streamlined dub.
Yeah, that was Kodansha who.
Yeah, I guess I always. Yeah, it's right. It's Inner Sound.
A common misconception. Yeah, it was Inner Sound. It was like, yeah, I think.
I know that too.
By a first-time dub director, and I think never again dub director, who happened to win an Oscar
Academy Award. That's right,
for best short documentary.
But they could say Academy Award winner.
Yep. So anyway, it's but the manga. I finally read the manga a few years ago, and it was good. It was definitely a better experience. It didn't take my breath away, but it was worth reading, in my opinion.
I think it's one of those things like the original Mobile Suit Gundam, where it influenced so much that going back to it now, you think, oh, this is so plain, that you don't realize that Otsumo's approach to paneling and such like that ended up being such an influence on so much manga that came afterwards, and the demographic that it spawned is like, you know, it's hard to go back and really understand, like, okay, Akira was the one that really started all this kind of stuff, unless you're kind of heavy into like the technicality issues of manga, which most people aren't.
It's got a little bit touch of that, what I call Citizen Kane syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, not like the video game reviewer Citizen Kane syndrome, but yeah, right. I understand.
Okay.
But yeah, the short answer to that question, yes and yes.
Onikuno asks, do you think anime cons will exist at all in 10 years? Or will they become catch-all cons, save a few, like Otakon and Anime Expo?
I think we're kind of already there. I mean, outside of the name on the marquee, we're largely already there. The main difference between Anime Con and the catch-all con is emphasis on programming. Like, what kind of programming do they offer? Like, certainly the New York Comic Con, there isn't a whole lot of fan-run stuff compared to, say, Otakon or a what have you. But what's actually being, like, who's showing up and what do they want? There's a lot of overlap. And I think the best way to illustrate that is to go to Artist Alley. Because Artist Alley is really the place where you really see what do the fans care about and what are they into. And there's very similar content being offered in the All Media Geek Con Artist Alley versus the Anime Con Artist Alley. I don't know how much time any of you guys have been spent going in Artist Alley.
I always spelunk it whenever I'm at a con.
Yeah,
I go by there once or twice. I mean, for me, it's just like it's a haze of anime-style drawings of Doctor Who.
Yeah, pretty much. The thing I remember most is that it's mostly, it's Bishonen.
Kissing.
Yeah.
Shirtless Bishonen kissing and anime-style Doctor Who.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, yeah, it's Doctor Who is a catch-all for many thing that is popular and shown on TV and is got a whole lot of advertising money behind it. For as much as people want to say, oh, I'm not affected by advertising, the stuff that's big in Artist Alley is stuff like the Marvel properties, the Avengers and what have you. Doctor Who, as mentioned, is Sherlock, things on the BBC.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Shirtless anime-style dudes from Sherlock kissing.
And Supernatural. Yep. Supernatural,
things on the CW, things, you know, that's what's big at, quote, the Anime Con. And certainly also web comics, things like, you know, Homestuck and all that. My Little Pony, American animation things are pretty heavily represented at these Artist Alley things. That's kind of where things are going. And that's why I'm saying, in a sense, the fan base is already there right now. I think the separation would just be if you have that few exceptions of Anime Con organizers who are very committed to the message. And in my experience, most con organizers are committed to selling tickets, not the message.
I don't agree with that.
I feel like that whole thing. I feel like that whole conundrum has been overstated. At least, you know, at the larger shows.
I think at the larger shows, that's the exception. But there's only maybe 20 or so larger shows.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, hundreds and hundreds of what's going on throughout the rest of America. Yeah, it's a much different story.
And okay. I do contend, Daryl, that part of the issue there isn't necessarily what will sell tickets. It's who's submitting the fan panels and what fan panels are they submitting.
I think the combination of the two.
Yeah, I think at the smaller cons, you'll see lots of like Homestuck and other non-anime stuff on the program because that's what fans are submitting to talk about.
Yep, you know, and otherwise they just have nothing to fill the schedule.
They can't afford to be selective like an Otakon or an Anime Expo can be.
But yeah, between what do the fans want, that ties into what is sold at the Artist Alley and et cetera, et cetera. So it is related.
I don't know. I still see plenty of anime stuff at the Artist Alley too. I mean, my big thing is like I don't feel like there's some kind of silent takeover going on here. I feel like there's other fandom stuff, other peripheral stuff that drifts in and out of the picture.
I feel like 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago maybe, we were complaining about some other popular thing that anime kids liked that was
Dance
creepy.
Dance Revolution.
It was creeping.
No, I don't think
much.
There was a complaint about that. Well, I mean, certainly we were complaining about the smell coming from the video game room.
Yeah, that was precise.
But observing that, like, oh, this other thing seems like it's more popular than anime is, and it's totally taking over the anime convention. Like, I only go to a few. Well, okay, I go to a fair amount of shows. But I only go to big shows, and at the big shows, you know, especially like Anime Expo, is remarkably pure still in terms.
Yeah,
of
I don't
like
think AX would really be subject to this same thing.
AX has a Homestuck photo gathering. That's its sole Homestuck programming,
and
interestingly,
boy, it's huge. I've seen it.
Well, no, the one. Well, yeah, the thing is, last year it was huge. This year it was considerably smaller.
That's true. Yeah.
At least if the photo and video evidence I've seen is to be believed.
Yeah, you're right.
So like I said, I feel like, you know, yeah, there's definitely other stuff, but it waxes and wanes. Anime is constant.
For the most part, yeah. I think a lot of the smaller cons, like, I've made this observation before, I think the big shows will generally stay, you know, the way that they are for the foreseeable future. Smaller conventions, I think, are more and more, like, if it started as an anime con, maybe it'll eventually turn into sort of an all-media, internet culture con. I don't see how that couldn't happen, because like Daryl said, like, there is an element of gotta sell tickets, and you're gonna sell a lot more tickets if you advertise your convention as internet con with Doctor Who, My Little Pony, and anime. You know, like, you're gonna sell more tickets that way. So, like, smaller cons, I could totally see them going that way. But
okay, well, what are some examples of fan conventions where they sell a lot more tickets by being broader?
Okay,
all of them in this state.
Okay. Sure. Like, you know. Okay.
That's the thing. It's just like, yeah, I know a lot of cons take that approach, but what are some big success stories?
Because I
can't really think of any. I mean, I feel like Project Akon is like that, but it's always kind of been like that.
Yeah,
I would say here in Florida, you know, the big success story is still a con that only draws about 3,000 people, but it's still the biggest anime, quote, con in the state, and it's one that also has fire dancing and Ren Fair and steampunk and, you know, all that stuff, but that's considered still, you know, their marquee says Anime Con, and when you go there, it's most assuredly not that. And many other cons have followed suit. There used to be an Anime Con down here in Miami, and then they actually straight up changed their name to be a General Animation and Etc. Con, which is not something that typically happens. So, I mean, it's more widespread than you think. I think it's just that you live in such a populated area of the country where there's mass transit that you can actually get enough anime fans in one place. And that's not really a thing that can happen throughout much of the rest of the country. And so what I'm talking about is kind of applicable to there. So will AnimeCon still exist? Yes. I think the big, big shows like that top 20, when you go to AnimeCons.com, they'll still be around and they'll still be keeping it real. I just, you know, I'm wondering what's going to happen for the smaller shows. I think I'm seeing it now.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't think... I think anime conventions don't today look like they did 10 years ago, but what does? So, there you go. Okay, actually, one last question here, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with this kerfuffle about Crunchyroll.
I did see it.
Okay. Yeah, so somebody asked about this, which is...
I've been away for a week. Can you recap?
Sure. It's the same scuzzy pirates using the same excuses to pirate stuff, saying that, you know, well, you know, Crunchyroll, they don't give all the money to the people who made the anime. They pay for their employees. I don't want my money going to those people. Pirates are the real consumers.
Yeah.
How is this a kerfuffle?
The kerfuffle was basically like some guy with a fairly popular blog did one of these things, which is increasingly part of anime fan culture now, which is I'm going to pull a bunch of shit out of my ass, present it as fact. And people who want to believe it will. And
well, that's because it's not just good enough for anime culture. It's good enough for the news.
It's good enough for the news. It's good enough for the internet.
It's true.
Yeah, which is increasingly irritating. So this guy basically said, like, well, here's their cost rundown. And effectively it was pirate shows buy merchandise and you're supporting the industry. Giving money to Crunchyroll doesn't do anything for the industry. And then proceeded to angrily argue with everyone who came into his comment section and say, like, no... you're a dummy, I know what I'm talking about, even though I don't actually know what Crunchyroll's books look like, you know, that kind of thing. And then Lauren Orsini, who's been on the show before, interviewed Kuhn at Crunchyroll, CEO, and he said, nope, here's what it is. And the question was basically, were you surprised with the revelations Crunchyroll's CEO had about where our money goes and how they get by with 10% paid subscribers? And my answer to that was simply no. None of that was news to me because Kuhn will break that down for you every time you ask him about it and has done so at every single panel I've ever seen him at. Like, those numbers are not a mystery.
Yeah, they're always very forthcoming with it. What really surprises me is that 90% of people are fine using Crunchyroll and seeing the same ad so many times in a 30-minute chunk of time. Like, that alone is like, God, take my $6 or $7.
Yeah.
So I never have to see this ad again.
It's just what? That this was all spurned by this guy's totally idiotic blog post that was just made up shit.
And like, people
just
ran with it because people want to believe it.
Yeah, because, right, exactly. It's they want to believe it, and so they do. That is extremely frustrating, and that is, like, misinformation is going to get spread that way so fast that it's upsetting and
I mean,
just... To even see him respond to it is upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just that whole fucking thing that it opens with, you know, the author like saying, oh, those people who pay for anime think they're better than us.
Yeah, it's a stupid, it always comes down to like dumb nerd tribalism. It always comes down to that shit.
Yeah.
And it's just so fucking tiresome. It's like, facts are facts, math is math. Like, at some point there has to be some kind of agreed upon objective reality.
Well, no, be careful, Zach, because that objective reality in the comments section can boil down to the reviews that are put out for shows.
Just fucking A, man. Nothing he said was surprising at all. Those numbers,
like I said, it's the same arguments that dorks, you know, were using to justify their piracy in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
The same shit.
But now it gets presented as like, well, if you think about it this way, and it's like, and then a bunch of people just run with it because that's convenient for them to believe that. And even though it has nothing to do with reality, it's just convenient for them to believe it. So,
yep.
Yeah, super annoying.
Yeah, it's gross, and that guy has rightfully kind of been slapped down.
Yeah. Well, good. That's good.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a positive note. We've been going for quite a while, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Big thanks to you guys for showing up. And, that was a long show.
Always a pleasure. Let's do it again, around New Year's, February, something like that?
About 6 months from now, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan. Maybe by then I'll actually have another episode of my own podcast out.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Daryl, Mike, and Justin for stopping by. Theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.